And welcome to another edition of Film Grok. My name is Serge Dalpierre, and this week we're going to be doing 2008's The Dark Knight. To my right is...
John H. Ruby.
To my left...
Tim McMillan.
To his left...
And Curtis Nelson.
So, I want to do the instructions before we start. We've queued it up to the right after the Warner Brothers logo. So, the music cue has started, but it's as soon as the Warner Brothers logo fades to black, pause it there. And then we're going to talk a little bit, and then when we're ready to go, we're going to say 3, 2, 1, play, you play, and then we'll all be in this in sync. So, okay, Dark Knight. Who goes first? Volunteers.
Whoever.
Go, Curtis.
Grew up a huge, huge comic book fan. I mean, me and my brothers, well, actually me and my older brother would basically get jobs just so we could buy comics.
Nice.
And we would travel in Oklahoma a good 3 or 4 miles, cross a couple of major freeways just to get to where we needed to get to our comic book store because they weren't sold at all newsstands. And there at the counter every week were the brand new comics that me and my brother collected, and those are for only special people that got that treatment. They would actually be sitting there waiting for us, and so I would always get X-Men and Batman were some of the comics that I would get. Nice. And they would be sitting there waiting for me. So
nice.
Yeah. You mean they actually pulled them for you?
Because he would actually pull them. Wow. So as soon as they delivered off the truck, he would separate all. There was probably about 30 or 40 people he'd do it for that were diehard comic book fans, and we were one of those groups. Oh. We just kept there. And
what year was
very
this?
Cool.
This is in, well, all the way through the 80s.
80s, okay, yeah, because in the 80s, I think that's when they started doing that, starting doing polls, you started having comic shops and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, similar background, I collected comics back in the 70s. All through the 70s, and only there was no such thing as comic shops back then, and no one did pulls. So basically, I had to make sure I got to. I had to get down to Miracle Mart, which was the mall down the street. So I had to go down there, and they'd have it on the stand to make sure they came out on Tuesdays. I'd get my comics because I'd get diligently the Superman ones, Superman action, Batman, almost importantly Batman and Detective and Justice League and Flash and all those. And then I think it got a little erratic, so I found a place further on down the other way down the big boulevard, out in the suburbs of Montreal, called Book and Toy Village.
Oh.
And I'd go there, but they knew me by name, and I'd always go there. And they didn't do any pulls though, but they had a really good selection because some places, collecting was just starting to take off, and comic books appreciation of comic books had changed. So, and that's how I came to actually Batman was my favorite character in the titles.
Nice.
So I don't know about you, but I was a DC guy also. So Batman, I mean, my favorite was actually Detective Comics, which is where Batman actually had the stories were better there than in Batman itself, strangely enough.
Sure.
And I like the art better. So
yeah.
Now how did the translation from appreciating Batman in comics translate to your appreciation in film and TV?
I mean, you couldn't ask for much better than what Christopher Nolan did. I mean, especially after you see, in my personal opinion, what happened to X-Men. I was, because that was really my comic, was X-Men. I just grew up loving that. So whenever I was like, oh, they're going to make a Batman? Okay, well, how are they going to do this? I never was a fan of the Tim Burton fans for all those, I mean, Tim Burton movies for those people out there. I just didn't like them. I just didn't. I mean, they were okay, but I just remember being thoroughly disappointed. I'm like, really, that's it?
Wow.
So, I mean, to me, and... But that so when this came out, I reserved comment until after, and then the first one I liked, but this one just blew me away. So
right, I mean my first exposure, honestly, to Batman was the Batman TV show.
Sure,
and I used to watch it two nights a week. Stay tuned, it would come back, same bat time, same bat channel. I think they were on like 2 days in a row, or Tuesdays and Thursdays, or something. I don't even remember what it was, but it was awesome. It was lots of fun. I mean, that's how I got to know Batman and the Batcave and the Batpole and William Shakespeare's head popping back with a little button. You get the sliding panel.
Yeah.
And then I got to comics. It's like, okay, what's a different thing? So I didn't have I was young enough. I'm like, well, I can all take it in and everything. And then when I started reading the comics, I was like, okay, I could separate the popcorn style, the comedic take that we're taking in the show from the more serious tone. And this is pre-Frank Miller also, I guess, and whatever he did.
Way pre.
Yeah. Well, this, I mean, 70s, but you still had good stories and great, great artists. Like, my favorite was Jim Aparo. I don't remember. And Neil Adams actually was really good at drawing Batman. So when Batman came along, I think I've said this before and I'll say it again, Tim Burton does great opening sequences. And then everything after that is just like, the opening sequence for Batman, Tim Burton's Batman was awesome. It was great. But then the movie's like, I mean, it was just a whole mixed bag of great ideas, but it's like, what is this? Mm-hmm. And, you know, Jack Nicholson, I mean, wonderful actor, but it was just like, it was just too much. Actually, out of the Batman films, my favorite is actually Batman Returns is actually quite decent. I mean, I love the tone of it. I love Michelle Pfeiffer as Catwoman. Mm-hmm. So, and then, of course, it was kind of a degeneration from there to sure. Batman.
Was it Forever? Batman Forever
was the third one, which is interesting. It's kind of popped, came out of the blue, Val Kilmer, I thought, did a decent job.
A
I would
job
just never think Bruce about it. It's like, okay, fine. And it became more of a showcase for the villains. And then the fourth one was...
Yeah.
And George Clooney will even say, what the hell was that? My favorite line of that, of course, is holy rusted metal. And, you know, the joke is it was actually, there's holes in the... And it's like, oh, please, at that point, forget the nipples on the costumes. And Alicia Silverstone, who tried her best, but still. So when Batman Begins came out, I was like, okay, let's give it a try. Because Nolan had done Memento, which I loved. And... I thought it did its job, but for me, it left me... I the editing drove me crazy. I always insisted...
It left you cold?
That's not cold. It's just like... I don't understand. Stop. Too much. So when this came out, I was like expecting more of the same. I think the gears did change on this one for me. As we'll discuss and find out, I don't think it's perfect, but I think it's definitely... There's some sequences are actually... brilliant, and it does try and accomplish much more. Actually, I was reading something very interesting yesterday. Yes, Tim. That
do tell.
Oh yeah, no, it had to do with origin. Had to do with
origin. He will,
but it had to do with
origin. Go on.
No, you go ahead. No, it had to do with origin stories. It often, when you come into a story, and I can't remember what the movie that I was thinking of, but actually, if you come into a story and not have to tell the origins are often the most boring part and having to get up to speed and do everything. And it was, once again, of course, I blanked out. But actually, if you skip past the origin, you know, it has to do with A-Team and, the whole thing of comparing A-Team and Karate Kid, but A-Team, the whole thing is A-Team, if you just dropped into A-Team, which apparently is a story production history, and didn't bother with the origin, you'd actually get something interesting. But if you have to go through the whole mechanics of how it started and all that kind of thing, usually pilots for TV shows are usually the worst things because they're introducing everything. Once you've got the story rolling, you know everything, or you're dropped into the middle of a circumstance, you know, what do they say? Usually start a story as late as possible. Well, if you're starting at the beginning, then that. And I think for me, the Batman Begins tried to do the origin. Great accomplishment. I know a lot of people who like it. For me, I'm like, it's interesting, different kind of take.
I find myself not going back and revisiting it a lot.
Same here also. And the whole thing of changing Ra's al Ghul, for me, I was just like, I'm sorry. Ra's al Ghul is the Asian dude. He's not, you know, the Caucasian dude. So I'm like, and not that it has to be purist, but I'm like, well, exactly. That is my whole reaction to it. So here, of course, and this, of course, has the great Keith Ledger, who won an Academy Award for this. It was just so much more impressive. And also, of course, mixing in the different IMAX footage in there was really great. I've just realized I've ranted on for like 15 minutes. So I'm going to shut
realized.
Up. I'm going to shut up and look at John for a few minutes.
It's only been 8 minutes, but it just might feel like 15 in your head. but it's only 8. We're good.
All right. Okay. So Batman.
Batman, I grew up with the television stuff when the Biff Bam Pow, and that was very, very fun. The other Batman movies, yeah, they became a little too, I like the darker look. They were a little too comical for me. The whole Arnold Schwarzenegger, Mr. Freeze was just, you know, just...
though I have to say, I did like his performance.
Yeah.
That is one of his best performances.
And you know what? I'm okay with comical, but for something, they just, I don't know, it just didn't hit the right way for me or something. I'm all for whatever. Anyhow, yes, I love the new version. I'm all for it and fantastic. Really, really nice. And this one really has a nice complicated sort of line in a way. It's sort of like, it's not just about the Joker, it's about the mob, and he's really on a mission to get rid of the mob, but then the Joker comes in, so it's really nicely done. I mean, everyone looks at the cover and talks about it, and it's all about the Joker, but there's actually a whole other line that's going on there than the Joker storyline takes over. So very, very nicely thought out, and I'm all about the story. So, yeah, I thoroughly enjoy it.
Tim? Oh, sorry, I got to say this right.
Tim? Batman. I am Tim. As a man in his mid-40s, the TV series was my first exposure. Yeah.
Then after that, the Tim Burton films. After Batman, was it Batman Returns? Was with Michelle Pfeiffer, Catwoman?
Yeah, it was Batman
Penguin
Returns.
And all that. Mm-hmm. After those, I became progressively more detached mm-hmm. with each installment. And I thought Batman Begins, Christopher Nolan, completely reinvigorated the franchise in a type A-grade style. You know, mm-hmm. just excellent job. And I was very excited to see The Dark Knight, see what he's going to do with that. And actually, it totally lives up to the title. This is, mm-hmm. for me, it's actually darker mm-hmm. than I would care
to
see.
And, yeah, I'm with
it's,
you on that,
and it's
actually.
Fantastic. I know from the comic book standpoint, mm-hmm. it's absolutely dead on. It's right. But wow, this was way too dark. I was uncomfortable through the whole movie.
Yeah.
I remember you telling me about that. Some sequences seriously disturbing.
It was unsettling to me. And also, which is also true to the comic books, I believe, I just have a hard time with the fact that no one in Gotham City deserves to be saved. Yeah. I look at Gotham and I see the whole, I'm like, ugh.
But interestingly enough, that was the thesis of Batman Begins, what they tried to get across, which was so different from all other takes about Gotham. The whole idea was that Gotham is so corrupt that it's got to be wiped clean, you know, and they've got to kill everyone in it. That was the whole thing they hinged on it. And so you're saying the second one that
even
they,
more so. I just find that in the Christopher Nolan universe of Batman right. and the Gotham that I really see in these, I'm like, let it go, Batman. who's going to notice?
can you move somewhere else? Do you really? Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Then
but
you
I just,
wouldn't have a movie then.
If I had more, you know, great people, inhabitants of Gotham, I might be care more. But right now, I'm like, Gotham's just, oh.
You know what I would really like, though, is that I would love to see, and I don't know how they can do this or if they'd ever want to even touch this. How does the rest of the country look at Batman? Do you know what I mean? They're saying this is real. True. We're in Gotham, which is a real place. It's just mob run. It's not too comic booky in a way, really. Joker.
These aren't.
So then I want to see Good Morning America, or you know what I mean? I would like to see some or version of that. Saying,
well, I think that's what I don't. That's what I do like about it is that it doesn't fit into that world. That's a more of a Superman world.
Yeah.
Right.
Let's see how the world thinks of Superman
doing. But my question is, could they do it in a cool way that actually still fits the movie that doesn't make it goofy or whatever? And I don't know. Maybe there isn't a way to do that. But
it's interesting. I don't think it fits in the kind of story or universe that this kind of tells or exists. It's interesting because the Nolans now are heavily involved in launching, rebooting Superman. So I'm curious. I'm more curious about seeing what they do with that than this. I mean, I'd love to see, you know, he's going to do a third Batman movie, and then that's going to be it. And I'm curious to see what the next person comes up with Batman, because I think this was another take. It's still not the take that I would take to heart. You know, Frank Miller I heard The Spirit wasn't too good, but Frank Miller having, you know, written for Batman, I was wondering if he could direct it really well, what he would do with that.
I wouldn't want to see that.
You didn't like The Spirit?
No.
Okay. I'm just saying in terms of the writing as opposed to direct, because they're two different things.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's very little of Frank Miller's stuff in this film or the other film. Now, there are dabblings of it. I forget the name of the graphic novel. There's a graphic novel of The Dark Knight, and it's just a huge volume, and I forget the name of it. So, I mean, I've stopped collecting comics.
Is that The Killing Joke?
No, it's literally like a giant Bible. It's huge. And if anybody wanted to go get it from their library or get it off Amazon, it's one of the first things that would pop up if you typed in Batman comics or Batman graphic novels. I mean, it's about a $30 book, and it's just a fantastic combination of different storylines. You know, I mean, it's Batman is just there's part of the book where he's older, like in his 60s, and there's another part of the book where he's fighting Superman. There's other parts where it's the Frank Miller versions, and everything's kind of condensed and combined together. A lot of it is the Frank Miller stuff,
right.
But it's very gritty, very dirty, and it draws from those, but doesn't take any definite storylines from them. And it just kind of the feel more than it is anything Frank Miller.
Yeah, because I mean, I never read that. I basically gave up reading comics sometime in the 80s, so I don't know what they did later, and obviously that was part of it. But, I mean, that's what it's important to mention Frank Miller, because that was the inspiration for changing the direction of what Batman was, and that's kind of where this has kind of gone to its roots, but obviously the Nolans took it in a different direction. So on that note, let's get started. because we can keep on talking and we will. Okay, so on my mark, 3, 2, 1, play. Nice Ooh. Music cue. What I love about the sequence that's coming up is how it just struck me how great it looked. And I think this is the part they shot in IMAX, correct?
Legendary
the
pictures.
The whole opening sequence, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's IMAX. Just it's so vivid, and just the camera work and the direction is well, just it's just stunning.
Going was it with you, the Tim, who you saw this on a, I mean, a you saw this at Warner Brothers at we, a very
I think
nice
I saw
screen,
this with you there, right?
And
I think so.
This
I,
opening sequence, if you ever see this in IMAX, the opening sequence, you see the depth. When they do the zip line across, mm-hmm. and you yeah. see, you can get
the zip line's amazing.
Like,
there we go.
Jesus
Here's,
H. Christ.
This shot is amazing. I just like, what is, and it's just so steady, and it's going right into that window.
It's like a 1,000-pound camera or something. It's huge. But
that's a killer shot.
And now, Tim, can you explain a little bit about the score of this right here? Like, because there's many people credited to this film.
Oh, the two composers are James Newton Howard and Hans Zimmer, mm-hmm. if I remember correctly. And it was a combination of them writing this score.
That's just great.
I love his showing anything.
It's just the mask. And just, what I love about it is just so matter-of-factly, this is a great action sequence. And Nolan, in this respect, sorry, I think Tim. Whatever lessons were learned about Batman Begins...
Yeah.
Were how to do this. It's just so cool. This is like Michael Mann directed this.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
It's got that feel.
So adult. This is an adult yes. Batman. I mean, this is not this 1960s TV show.
Well,
it's as far away as you can get. This is the adult Batman, guys.
Right. I mean, look at this. I mean, they're introducing the Joker. And it's just it's very it's, cool and meticulous.
It's also a great way, real quick lines, just to okay the makeup thing. Because if you think about it, wearing makeup like that is kind of goofy. But once you call it war paint and to scare people, then it's like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a cool masculine thing to do.
And I love how in this opening sequence, the Joker pretty much is doing very little. Everybody else is doing everything.
Yeah.
He's just kind of standing off to the back.
The thing is, you don't even know who the Joker is.
Exactly. Right. Exactly.
And except for the odds are, if you're good storytelling, you know it's the guy on the corner.
Yeah.
Because you focus on him. Oh, yeah. Because the Joker's all about, can you manipulate other people to be really scummy?
Exactly. Yeah. And this is what, set up the whole premise in this entire beginning part by having them all kill each other. And of course,
and this guy,
this is William Fichtner.
Yeah. And
he was a great character actor.
I loved him in Contact with Jodie Foster. Yeah. He was wonderful.
He's great. He's
in that.
On TV. He was in Invasion. He was in Prison Break. Oh,
and
awesome.
It's also great. He's really well written. I mean, he just gets up with that shotgun. He's like, what the hell are you doing?
There's,
you know what I mean?
There's so many, actually, on that note, William Fichtner note. I mean, there's so many good actors that took these little bitty parts in this movie. Yeah. You're like, wow, okay. Well, I mean, they wanted to be involved in some way, shape, or form, so...
And may I say how wonderful it's not all shaky cam.
Oh.
I love how steady it's been.
Oh,
nice and smooth and classic.
No,
nice.
No, Chris Nolan's great in that respect.
It's
kind of
really hard to hold an IMAX camera. You put this up on your shoulder.
Hey, you can put it on a steady cam. It just have to be a very big.
But no, I do like the same thing, Tim.
I mean, it's not the Bourne Identity. I sort of like that with the camera work here.
Yeah.
When Bourne Identity is well shot. You're talking about the other Bourne.
Well, that was shaky too, but all the Bournes are shaky.
No, the first one wasn't. No, the first one was actually really well composed, like this. Not a lot
smooth?
Of handouts.
Smooth?
Very smooth.
Okay.
And it's the other two because Greengrass, Paul Greengrass did the other two. He's a good director, but it's just his style.
Okay.
Yeah, I love all this stuff.
Yeah,
well,
it's fabulous.
That is him. That is
now.
The
what's
Joker.
The story behind the Hans Zimmer score right here? That's just that, just the strings about to pop. Isn't there a story we were talking about where he basically just kept the note going forever and ever and ever and for eternity to build the tension? When is this going to stop? And that I can't remember. Him and Nolan were having a conversation, and I thought you might know the.
I'm sorry, I don't. But he's just saying that he kept the music at a steady. What was that you were saying?
Just like the string was about to bust. The tension's about to bust.
I see.
Well, that was well timed.
That was fantastic.
And also, he just told you what he's going to do, which is kill the bus driver.
they didn't have to worry about looping the sequence.
Yeah.
With the masks on these guys.
Nope. Don't worry about the timing.
Yeah.
And I mean, this first sequence is just so cold.
The whole movie is
so
cold.
So cold. But so cold compared to anything else we see in movies. Mm. And it's great that Nolan went there.
Well, I mean, you were talking about Tim Burton having great openings. To me, this is just a fantastic... I mean, this sets up the whole movie as far as, like, this is what you can expect for the rest of this film.
This is the hype. Whatever doesn't kill you makes you a stranger. And at first, I thought that was a hand grenade.
Isn't it a hand grenade? Oh, no, it's a smoke.
Yeah.
We all think it's a hand grenade. All
right.
Well, I think what impresses me most about Christopher Nolan's take on just a comic book world, we'll just stick with that, is let's just stick it in a real world setting. Let's film it like a real film. Mm-hmm. Let's not make it comic booky.
Right.
Let's not make it jokey. Let's not make it dumbed down for kids.
Right.
And guess what? Everybody gets it. So it just opens it up for every genre. So for these people that are making these films, this is why it made $2 gazillion because... Yeah. They didn't cater to any certain audience. They catered to the audience, which is you either catch on and ride on this plane or you're not going to go. So
all the aerial footage of Gotham in this film, oh, man, it blew me away. Mm-hmm. Just beautiful environment, the way it's shot. And the steady aerial photography that they use, tremendous.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Gary Oldman... I'm a fine actor, brilliant actor. I just never bought him or cared for him as Commissioner Gordon. Sorry.
Hmm.
Well,
sorry.
If the comic I was talking about, that's what Frank Miller did, was Frank Miller made him more of just a detective, not this jokey kind of guy that was kind of always on Batman's heels or, you know, never really knew where he stood with him. And he's kind of a badass, you know, kind of like he's just as willing as Batman in the Frank Miller versions to
clean up the
cross the line a little bit to get the city cleaned up. And you can see in these films, they did take a lot of that from those.
Which I like, but I like the writing. And Gary Oldman's, once again, perfectly fine. I just, for me, doesn't live as much. Oh, that's right. This is what happens in this one. That's right. Which actually this scene addresses writing-wise a different...
Well, this guy's from the last show. The last movie.
Yeah,
so they cleaned that up.
Cillian Murphy.
Which
this is
nice.
A Scarecrow.
Right.
Which is a nice little carryover.
Well, it's interesting because it kind of shows that he never really amounted to much, even after. Yeah. You know, it's like, I wonder what happened to him. Well, this kind of lets you know that he's just a thug like anybody else now.
Yeah,
it's like,
just selling drugs. Yep.
How's everyone? What's your take on Christian Bale's performance?
Well, considering Christian Bale's not in the film yet.
Oh, I mean, as Batman in this new regime of Batman. Christian Bale?
I totally
compared to
him.
Commissioner Gordon with what Sarah
said? Well, you know, okay, maybe this is the problem that I have is I've got a... Doing an American accent, some British and Australian actors can do it really well. Most have a little bit of a tough time, and this is just me because I have a really good ear. I tend to kind of hear through it, so it kind of takes me out of it a bit in terms of the slight over exaggeration of how they say it. So I get a bit of that definitely from Oldman, but Christian Bale's a little better. But it still takes me away from it. It separates me a bit from
the
performance.
And you can't do that. Do you know that?
You can't do what?
You can't grab metal with one hand and bend it. You have to have opposite force.
Did you hear the yeah. You know, that was a some sort of contraption he had on his wrist. And they'll show it here in a second.
Oh, okay.
That brings up a good point. That's what I like about what Christopher Nolan does. He doesn't over-explain things too much or make everything kind of showy.
Yeah.
So like right here, when he cuts into the side of the car, that's the contraption he just used to bend the gun. It's basically just a hydraulic twist.
Gotcha.
So, you know, it's kind of convenient he had that.
We have logic.
Yeah.
Well, you have a lot of logic. That's... Actually, in talking about Christian Bale as Batman, one thing is I think everyone's basically done a good job doing Batman as Bruce Wayne is also always where it kind of gets like Michael Keaton, I think, did a great job as Batman.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I did too.
The whole Bruce Wayne thing, but even Val Kilmer did a good job, and Clooney, I don't remember.
That's just great.
But
I
Christian
think Clooney
Bale
would have been
awesome.
A fine Batman. Actually, I mean, like I would think he would do very well in the Christopher Nolan world as Batman. Very good, actually. I would love it because a big portion of some of the comics are him as an older man, and to be able to experience that with Clooney would be a good choice. So
I think Clooney was caught in the camp.
He was yeah. I mean, it's like this is the
film,
movie I'm in.
What could you do with it? You know?
Oh, because Clooney's an awesome actor. I mean, and in really real stuff. You ever seen the pacifier? What was
the Peacemaker?
The Peacemaker. That's right. He's
the baby in the pacifier.
He's awesome.
And
it's not a great film. It's a really good film, but he's awesome. He's badass.
Mm-hmm. No, you're right.
Christian Bale. I mean, I thought he's good. I mean, is this the part where we talk about the Christian Bale voice?
This is a very extreme Batman voice.
It just goes down to here now.
Yeah. Well, it'd be one of those things too, where if he is Bruce Wayne, that's what I never could kind of get about Clark Kent.
True,
like he just
it's a way to disguise his voice.
It's a way he disguises himself, you know. Yeah. So it never bumped me as much as it does a lot of people. But
I don't mind it here as much as it bothered me in Terminator Salvation.
Ooh. Oh yeah, now all of a sudden it's become like a Al Pacino. All of a sudden, after Sin of a Woman, he became this gravelly guy. You're like, wait a minute, weren't you up here and always talking like this in the 70s? And now it's like, hey. Yeah. So you know they get into
Michael Caine.
And I like that
rocks.
Michael Caine.
He's coming out new movie.
I want to see that.
Michael Caine.
I want to see that movie where
Harry
he's
Brown.
The tough guy.
Harry Brown.
Oh my god.
Actually it's been out and I think just like we got a very limited release, but it's going to be out on video soon.
It's very good.
Totally.
Yeah. Has any actor had a better body of work
Michael
and filmography than Michael Caine?
Yeah. No.
I mean, come on.
He's done
on.
Everything on the face of the
planet. We love Michael Caine.
He's great. And he's a perfect Alfred. And
this was great. Okay, out of any of the Batcave, so to speak, it's great. He goes to some shipping container somewhere, and that leads down into the space. Yeah. I think that's awesome.
Mm. Well, I mean, they're rebuilding the Batcave essentially because the mansion
fire.
Was destroyed.
Right.
And so supposedly, I guess the rumor has been, but Christopher Nolan, you never know with him.
Right.
They're rebuilding it, and they're going to be in another mansion in the next movie. And blah blah blah.
Sweet. But I like this Batcave.
Well, what I was going to say about Michael Caine, what he really brings to this film, besides just Michael Caine, all the great actors in it, is so much weight. To the characters, you know, I mean,
yeah, it's tough.
And so with Michael Caine, you have this relationship between the two of them with really nothing being said. You don't ever really have to have a backstory of showing him bottle feeding him as a kid or, you know, changing his diapers or whatever it might be that he did for this family their whole life. He just is the guy.
Right. And this set of films explored that most successfully as opposed to the Tim Burton ones.
Has anyone seen the Michael Caine screen acting instructional
video? I've seen it, and every time I watch him now, I can't not think of that because he talks
his bag of tricks.
His little bag of tricks of facing one eye into camera. You know,
any actors out there listening.
If you're ever doing a scene with somebody, you always look into their eye that's closest. I mean, it's like it's just hilarious.
Their
so
eye all the cinematic
camera.
Tricks.
So you open your face up to the camera.
The
and
man
really
is
amazing.
An encyclopedia, and you realize there's a reason why he's at where he's at.
Yeah,
I like the art direction in this scene. That everything is so concrete. It's cold, and it's just those hard angles all over the place.
So when he was talking to Christian Bale, he was looking in the right eye.
So like if the camera is on. Let's say you're acting with me and the camera's on your left.
Yeah.
So, and you're now facing me, you need to look at my eye that's closest
to
camera.
The camera. Right.
But you need to look at this eye
right.
with the
right.
furthest eye from camera
right.
to cross it up so that way you're facing into camera.
Right,
if that
right,
makes
right,
any
right.
sense.
I think all the listeners are very confused.
It moves your head just a little bit.
That little minute detail, and you see his acting. Tape and it makes perfect sense because he does it the other way and you're like, holy crap!
All right, it's a great thing to watch.
Can we talk Maggie Gyllenhaal for a second?
The oldest 32-year-old on the face of the planet.
She's fantastic.
Oh man,
wow,
dude,
she's
a good actress.
She's a great actress.
She's a phenomenal actress. But what they also did up to this point, which is so phenomenal, they talked about they set the plot so quickly after the scarecrow scene. Mm-hmm. It was trying to get the mob. And then, is this guy, can he be trusted, the DA? And then we come in here and we learn that the mob's going to get off. And it's just like they really boom, 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 just really set the plot really well.
Oh, yeah.
Very.
Here's Eric, another famous character actor, Eric Roberts.
People sometimes forget that Eric Roberts had a string of like 8 movies where he was nominated for an Oscar every year. Pulp of Greenwich Village and, you know, just, you know, the Money Train. Runaway Train. Sorry for all those.
I hear his sister acts too.
Oh, yeah. I've heard of her.
I don't know who you're talking about.
But
apparently his niece, well, is it his niece or is his daughter?
No, it's his daughter.
Emma Roberts is his daughter? Yeah, she's supposed to be getting big.
Yeah. Well, she did that Warner Bros. But you were saying Maggie Gyllenhaal. What interested me about the Switch,
yes,
I never understood, was her character that needy of a fantastic actress? And did Katie Holmes do that bad of a job in the last one? I never got the whole criticism. I mean, I could understand where it was like, okay, well, you didn't like her maybe, but just this criticism that she was atrocious.
She was all right. She wasn't anything. I don't know. Maybe
she did things offset that I didn't.
Or maybe
didn't
they just decided
film.
They wanted a different actress. They wanted different.
I thought
Katie Holmes portrayed the character much weaker than it should have been. Much lightweight. I didn't believe it for a second.
I like the fact the camera is still moving in here on them.
Yeah,
nice. They moved in and
a lot of great location work.
Oh yeah, lots of. I mean, the emphasis. I mean, you see the city right behind them. They are part of the city.
That is not green screen. That is not green screen.
It's all real, which is great.
And you know, once again, to fill this whole movie with so many great, well written actors. Characters played by great actors.
Yeah, and Aaron Eckhart, we have to acknowledge too, is great. I mean, it's great that he's gotten into these kind of roles.
He was very upset when his character got killed off. He was expecting to come back.
Oh, Two-Face?
Yeah. And it's like, what?
Biggest dimple since Kirk Douglas.
Kirk Douglas.
You got to talk with your chin with a divot like that.
Yeah, I don't know why.
He was in the Aaron Brockovich.
Yes.
He was very good in that.
And a nobody. Nobody knew who he was.
That's the way he'd done in The Company of Men, like just before that. Mm-hmm. And see, this is where.
What?
I don't know. Here, I think this is where. It's not that it was losing me, but it was like, okay, where is this? And it's like, I don't know what's happening with Batman, but it's like, okay, we have this other subplot happening. Mm-hmm. Well, this is the plot, but it's not a subplot. And I never. I get that he's on a crusade, but there's something about it that I didn't feel.
Mm. Mm.
There's something about, I know he wants to do it because I know at the end it's explained that he was the White Knight and that's why, you know, Batman's a Dark Knight. Mm-hmm. Oh, look, there's the subway system from
You know,
from the first
I totally
film.
Hear what you're Remember? Saying. And the court scene didn't really do it for you, even though he had to punch the guy.
I felt kind of manipulative. I'm like, I like that he's playing the bon vivant.
Yeah. I love sleeping.
Isn't that guy on screen left from The Electric Company?
Yeah. Yeah.
Heard him.
And
I've heard
he's also done some voiceovers in films.
Played God once, right?
I think he's played a prisoner in a film once.
He's doing voiceover or he's on doing for Wormholes on the Science Center
right
now.
I mean, once again, what do you say? I mean, fantastic actors in it. Yeah. But look at that shot.
Reflective surfaces.
Yeah. Nice.
So well done.
Well, it's the choices of shooting in rooms with low ceilings and using perspective and repetitive elements in an image. I really like that stuff.
Once again, look at that camera not standing still, but just slightly moving.
Move. Okay, it does slightly move, yes.
But no.
And it matches.
But it's moving up. It's moving.
One's moving up.
What it is, it's basically, it's... Is it called trucking up? I guess when you crank it up, but you're tilting down. That's what he was doing, just very, very subtly.
But it's not overcut. I've been watching the dynamics of the cutting. It's nicely paced.
Well, you watch even the action sequences. Now, they're going to be quicker cuts and everything else, but they're not as quick cut as you would think.
Batman Begins.
Paul Greengrass in Bourne Ultimatum, where I just basically was like, where's my Dramamine, please?
Or the previous film, which is a big problem I had, especially with the fight in the subway at the end. I was like, I'm a big proponent of, if there's a fight, I want to see the fight.
That's right. Sure. I remember that in Batman, that Yeah. Was it this one where I get lost, where I can't see what's happening?
That, no, that was in the previous one. That was
that
in Batman
was
Begins.
The previous one. Okay.
It's the one where I made my, you know, it's where I said that you could have shot the subway scene in a bathroom because I couldn't tell where the heck they were.
Mm-hmm. Dark, but it was overcut scenes. Overcut. I remember in the fight scene. And yeah, I couldn't even see any fight choreography going on.
It's like Master and Commander. That's my problem with it. I like the movie, but all the fight scenes, it's like they it's all cut so quickly that you don't get a sense of, I want to see what happens when you fight.
I'm with you on that.
Do we know the DP's name on this?
I will find out.
This table scene in the restaurant, very nicely lit.
Wally Pfister.
Nice light. Look at the rim light on this.
Mr. Pfister, very good job. Oh, look at that. Oh, wow, that's a rim light.
Right, yeah. On everyone. Look at everyone's hair. They've got it.
And they're out to dinner.
And this is really well written and well acted, too, because you can tell he's really looking at him and trying to figure out, can he be trusted? Mm-hmm.
It looks like he's worked with Nolan since the early days. He did Memento. He did Insomnia. Hmm. He did The Italian Job, not Nolan.
The remake.
Batman Begins. Yeah, the remake. Oh, yeah, totally the remake. Prestige. So it's like, you know, it's his crew.
And that's also the theme line for
what is?
Whatever. For Harvey Dent, you either die a hero or live long enough to be a villain. And he becomes Two-Face, and also at the very end, Batman at least gets called a villain, even though he's not. So
trying to set up more of a psychological underpinning for him becoming, you know, being so high and mighty and famous, or being a crusader and then becoming this villain, as to give the contrast to Batman. It just for whatever reasons, once again, I just found a harder time to buy into that. Now the Joker, on the other hand. I bought him from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. You know?
Oh, yeah. I remember this scene.
This is a great...
Yeah. I remember the reaction of the audience during this scene.
With the pencil?
Well, here's another thing. It's like, this is what I love about Christopher Nolan's comic book movies as opposed to, let's just say, others.
Yeah.
Which would be Bryan Singer. The fact that you just... kill a guy by jabbing a pencil through his brain. You know, yeah. I mean, it's like,
and no one says anything.
How you do it is you put the pencil on the table and you.
But
it's not just
that. It's the fact that this is real. This is a real world. This isn't something that's you know. I mean, it's like in a lot of those other comic movies. I mean, some you do in Iron Man. There's some deaths and things like that. But I mean, in a lot of the other ones, you're like, okay, what's going on here? There's no drama behind it.
This one's brutal, and it's take no prisoners. Like anyone can die.
Michael J. White.
Was that Michael J. White?
Yeah.
Oh,
who was
man.
In Spawn? He was
Spawn.
He was a fantastic.
He was cut out of Kill Bill, Kill Bill Volume Two. Yeah.
Michael J. White, by the way, for anybody that doesn't know, is like a 900-degree black belt or something. I mean, he's absolutely fantastic and amazing. There's a YouTube clip where you can see him on YouTube actually instructing Kimbo Slice how to punch, where they're shooting this prison movie together. So later, whenever he's getting beat up by Joker, you can think, not really, but anyway.
And now this is really the first time we're really introduced to the Joker as...
But I love how every scene he's in has got this just tense...
And it's just like... That just happened. What just happened?
And I love the fact that this guy likes it. He's like, "Hey, this guy's right."
Well, I mean,
what I don't now. Okay, I'm sorry. The logic is I don't buy it. It's like, why wouldn't, if they've got guns in the room, why wouldn't someone just pull out the gun and kill him at that moment?
Because he's not threatening.
He
killed this guy,
but he's still not threatening. He doesn't have a gun or a knife out. I mean, he did stand up and he was going to kill him, but the other guy told him to settle down. I don't know. Because he's crazy.
Well, we know he's crazy.
Yeah.
See, I want to know what he was going to say. And he changed his mind.
He just got cut off.
Yeah, I love it.
But that's the genius.
That's good.
That's the genius of Heath Ledger's performance, of how spontaneous he made it seem.
And the fact that he goes from a high voice to a low voice.
And the
way he pitches it.
And you have to hang your head low and look up.
Yeah,
that's when you look crazy and menacing.
The television's plan. It's great.
That's great.
He doesn't even answer himself. And
yeah.
Just
yeah,
points.
Yeah.
Oh, good advice.
It was very calculated.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
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 Well, that music's definitely keeping a steady pulse through this. On edge.
And now this take on the Joker, I mean,
that's
definitely owes to the Jokers of the past, but it's so...
And the makeup, the choice of having the makeup all runny.
He's so... I mean, what makes him a great villain and how Heath Ledger is so hardcore. He is so, I am willing to die at this moment, which makes him a great movie character. Because you never know what he's going to do.
And he's
so
smart.
What are they going to do now? Because isn't it Joker is the best villain of the entire...
They've already said they're not going to bring him in.
Oh, no, no. That's
you're not going to have someone replace him.
Absolutely not.
So where do they go from here?
Oh,
where
there's a ton of
like,
Batman.
I know they are, but the Joker is the classic one, right, of all time.
Yeah.
Well, but frankly, there's Riddler
it's like,
and
it's like Lex Luthor Riddler being and overused Catwoman. In Superman. There are so many other villains we could go with.
Oh yeah, let's. Every time it's like we have to bring Lex Luthor in. Superman can't exist without Lex Luthor.
No. But I would love to sit down and ask if I had a chance to talk to Christopher Nolan, which would be far and never going to happen. But anyway, I would love to ask him like. What was the process of hiring Heath Ledger? Did Heath Ledger show him what he was going to do? Did he just on faith know that he would bring something good to the table? Mm-hmm. And then the first day basically just was like, holy shit. Or, you know, like how was that process in the picking? Because that was such a pivotal choice.
Oh, look,
to the
it's
success
the bookcase.
Of this movie.
Just like in the TV show.
That
is so cool. Well,
and when you say that makes me think of the Johnny Depp Pirates of the Caribbean thing. I heard, and who knows if there's any closeness to accuracy, that when they saw the first dailies, they were horrified.
No, they were, and Johnny Depp says that.
Yeah, okay.
Disney?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
They were like, what the hell's going on here? But, you know, I mean, being scared of the, what the shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Not that it was a bad performance, but they're like, what the hell? He's not acting. He's just being a goofball. Yeah. So I would love to know, like, what was the process in that finding?
I found it interesting that the audience fell in love and giggled at a psychotic villain.
But
they were just giddy.
That is Heath Ledger's gift.
Well,
is the whole thing is that he was so spontaneous.
It's also
and so creative.
It's a well-written
and,
character.
Yeah, it's
and
also
the
people,
writing.
Yeah, it's also people laugh when they get nervous.
Yeah,
the brain does something weird that you have to release tension and laughter can come out
that goes back to him being such a great villain in the sense that he's willing. Is he
did you pick up on that? He said he should do fine against cats. A lot of people think that that's a tip of the hat to say that Catwoman will eventually be in the.
I totally Catwoman should be in it. But I think the Riddler is going to be the next. What I've been reading is that the latest rumor is Joseph Gordon-Levitt as the Riddler.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt
is a really
actually
good actor.
He would work in a documentary about Heath Ledger. I mean, he looks ton shit like Heath Ledger. So anyway, just on my personal.
Well, I'm just saying. But anyway,
shots.
That's nice.
Our first lush, brightly lit shot in the film.
I'm sure they hated shooting on that boat.
Mm-hmm. With all those women, must have been.
He plays a really good Bruce Wayne, a really good bon vivant.
He does
very good playboy, essentially.
And that was a great line too, because instead of like an old man trapped with women, and he says, "I'm going to love it here," he's like, "I don't want to put suntan lotion on these people."
Was that the plane from Raiders of the Lost Ark?
Yeah.
Yes. This is a great scene.
Same pilot.
And
this
what
is
a great
phenomenal
monologue.
Scene.
What a great monologue.
But Tim, this is the first time when I saw this and his whole first explanation of that, I was like, this is too dark for me. I was just
because this is what a real villain would do.
I know.
I don't remember the scene.
Be a puss. Oh, let's shut up and let it go.
All right.
It's just
great music cue.
It's just brilliant.
And I love his story. Yeah. I love the story that he tells.
Well, what I love is that you don't know if it's true or not.
Well, that's the thing. The way he tells it is amazing. It's so truthful. And then you're let in on the joke the second time when he tells a total different one.
Yeah.
And then you know this guy's truly fucking batshit.
Yeah.
So to speak.
Because the way he tells it is just, he's so
menacing. And that's why they gave him a PG-13 for menacing.
Oh, yes.
No, I'm serious, it is menacing, but
truthful. The whole thing. Yes. It's like, this was the story.
Yeah.
Look at this.
It's just brutal.
And everything off camera. I love it.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's right. He's basically said you have to kill. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's always manipulating everybody.
Yeah, to be their worst.
But he's the. I'm trying to think. It's authoritarianism. It's the true practice of malicious authoritarianism, because that's what you do, is you get everyone else to be on your side to kill your enemies, because otherwise you're going to kill them.
I forget the story of some dictator used to do that before he would even think of having somebody on his right hand. He would always have him pitted against somebody else to see how loyal they were, and they had to kill that person. And they were both essentially up for the same position or whatever.
But that's
tyranny. I mean, that's what he is. He is, what do you call, a tyrannist?
I made my wife take out my last three ex-girlfriends.
Oh.
Smart. That's not even funny.
And then I said, she loves me.
You know, because the thing that this was compared to when this came out was to terrorism. But I don't think it's not about terrorism. It's about, he's using terror. He's not even using terror. It's tyranny. He's using tyranny to advance himself in the criminal world so that he can therefore, quote unquote, because his goal is not to terrorize. No, he's out to prove
a point. You're right,
but
he's also there just to... just to create chaos.
He's Loki, basically. Yeah. He's only doing the god of chaos.
What humans are capable of doing.
It's not about logic. He's all about chaos.
He's just putting the marbles in play. See where they roll.
Right. And he basically takes it to the... He's willing to go to the nth degree where no one else is willing to go. Which does not make him admirable. It just makes him a monster.
But does it? And that's the question that Christopher Nolan and his brother bring up when writing.
Well, it does make him a monster, but our admiring him, once again, through the appreciation of fiction and projection, is that we can live through him, through his monstrous acts, and say that truly is bad and question the morality of it.
No, I don't think so. It's over. I think it's in every human being that they would like to be able to do
something. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. You know what? I wish I had the balls to do this sometimes. Maybe not so drastic as what he's doing.
But that's exactly what I'm saying. Essentially, in film, we want to be, in other words, we'd like to be Batman, but we'd like to be the Joker too. We'd like to be able to act with that impunity. And this, that's what fiction gives us, is, or in movies, it gives us a chance to identify and then live through that and not have to actually do it.
Well, and also, it's like I've heard people talk about dreams, that if people are, they can be possibly used in a spiritual way as movies, as in it gives us an opportunity to do something and see the consequences without actually doing it.
Yes.
So, a dream, we can have that experience, and then we wake up and we're like, oh, wow, I don't need to do that now because I know how that's going to turn out. Right. And with Joker, like you said, we want to do that, but then we really see it on the film, like, well, I don't know if I really want to do that. Well,
because, but truly, yeah. I mean, when you talk about him being, you know, a god of chaos, I mean, he truly, he is, he's like the most primitive animal. Mm-hmm. He would do what we could not do, and so we want to see him do it so we never have to do it, which is, once again, I think the Greeks talked about that. That was the point of fiction. Mm-hmm. Now, this subplot... Can someone please explain to me the importance of this? The importance. I get the subplot, but why did it need to be in the film?
Well, because I don't think... well, then you would have had done a whole different Joker story. See, Joker is not the mastermind of a plot. He is the chaos. He is chaos.
He is chaos. And,
it's the mob that has the whole plot. And he even says, I'm not a planner. I'm not a schemer.
Which is different than all other villains we've had in any superhero universe. The villain always has a plan.
Right.
Whereas, okay, that's interesting. Okay, so Joker, this is part of the mob living life and whatever. And Batman is following
this guy
that
took all the money. So now Batman has to bring him back for one to, I don't probably not to get the money, but to testify against the mob.
But also Batman is fulfilling the I'm taking down the criminal who has done the bad thing.
Right. And also...
And Joker is not the only, he's not the criminal. He's like he's the fly in the ointment. I'm like, I can't let you.
Right now, they talk about it briefly. That he's just a petty criminal right now to Batman, and he said this is bringing down all the mob in Gotham is more important.
Right.
So we're not going to focus on this petty criminal at the moment.
Well, that's why I'm...
this airlift thing out is way freaking cool.
Oh yeah.
It's also why this movie's 2.5 hours long. It's all the action.
I got to say, Christian Bale did all of his, at least most of his stunt work, right? His fight work?
Do we know? I don't know how much. There's a reason why his second unit can, the great thing about being in a Batman suit is that you can have a stuntman just as easily doing that karate stuff as you can Christian Bale. He did it quite a bit of it. That's true.
Well, I'm just saying his physicality was great for this film. It really was.
He did quite a bit of it, yes. But, for the sake of time, I'm sure there's quite a few shots.
This is awesome. Yeah. And this is
I'd
Hong
be
Kong,
interested
right?
To know.
I would think so. Yeah. I think they actually shot in Hong Kong.
Hong Kong or Singapore.
Yes, Tim.
Yeah.
I'd be interested to know how much CG work was done for the Gotham skylines and all these shots compared to actual photography of the city.
Lots of manipulation.
Really?
Yeah. Well, at least Gotham. This may have been...
I mean, this looks... That looked real.
I think that's Hong Kong. I wasn't paying attention to where he was.
I don't know.
It's very impressive. What I like is the fact that I can't blatantly tell.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So
right,
kudos to them.
And so now they've gotten the criminal and everyone's happy. I think he's supposed to be a pretty big Asian actor, and I just don't know who he is. Anybody?
He's Mr. Lau.
I don't recognize him.
I'll look him up.
I do not recognize the actor.
I don't think he's Japanese. I think he's Korean.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that because of any visual signs. I think I remember hearing a story once.
Does anyone know the status on the next installment?
Actually, I just saw that on the Intertubes. I will tell you right now.
Oh, and by the way, they're answering your question from earlier, Serge, about why the subplot, because this is also previously planned by the Joker to get him being protected and all this other thing. So
oh, so he planned it all. Okay, so he it is it's another on. Okay. So in other words, and he does have a plan. That. Only he says he doesn't have a plan.
Exactly,
which is great. I mean, which was great.
He has an idea where it's going to go, and he understands what might happen. But yeah. as it goes and goes and goes, you're going to see that.
Yeah, Batman 3 will be out on July 20th. Batman 3 will be out on July 12th, 20th, 2012. All right. That's
2012. Right around the corner.
Yep. Yes, John?
I don't know if, I mean, I know Joker does have plans, but I don't know his plans are that.
No, he's worked this.
There's
all
obvious
the angles
things
out.
That he knows going to come yeah. of him being captured, and that's one of them. He's going to be able to get to the judge,
yeah.
and he just knows that there are about two or three possible outcomes, and he's ready
right.
for all.
Yeah. He might have a lot of games going on at let's say.
Exactly,
right
and now. Wherever the pieces move, that's the next movie.
Right, yes, but the point is, ahead of time, he set up all the pieces. In,
exactly.
In other words, they're all going. Hey, Mr. Carbonell.
Mr.
Carbonell.
Can
somebody tell me if he had permanently tattooed
no.
eyeliner
Dude, it's
on or
just
something?
His
that's,
eyes.
That's just the way it is. And he played the Tick. He played what on the Tick?
Oh, he was on Tick?
Yeah, the Tick. He played some superhero. And those eyes, his coloring around his eyes came in very handy with the mask that he had on his face.
I
just
can never get not used to seeing the Brooke Shields sitcom or whatever it was he was
Suddenly
on.
Susan.
Suddenly Susan, yeah.
Oh,
and he had a very
wasn't he on
thick
Wings
accent
also?
In Suddenly Susan.
Yeah.
Was he on Wings? No, it was Suddenly Susan. You're right.
Actually, Nesta Carbonell produced a movie called Attention Shoppers that Casey Affleck was in before Casey Affleck hit it big. And I remember seeing an interview with Nesta Carbonell plugging it. I watched it. I saw it. It was a nice little film.
He's a good actor.
He's definitely carved, you know, his niches. Well, Lost, of course. Well, this and Lost, of course, being the biggest.
That was great. I jumped again. Jesus, scared the bejesus out of me.
He did.
And
I
see,
saw
this
him.
Is what's amazing. He just killed that dude. I mean,
yeah,
Joker killed this guy, and it's like so. Now later, when we see the video, we're like, oh,
yeah,
guy's serious business here.
Yeah.
So well, once again, this is a real world movie, not a comic book movie, kids.
Right.
And you know what though? I don't mind showing these things to my kids. I'm a dork. But
both your kids have seen this?
Yes.
What?
I have no problem. I
was their take on it?
They loved it.
Yeah, I haven't shown my 7-year-old yet.
See, I don't know. For me, the nihilism in this, I'd have to wait until they could process it.
They can process it. Kids are smarter than people give them credit for.
Oh, I think they're smart. It's just emotionally if they can process the nihilism. All right, here's your TV thing.
It's also individual kids, I think.
I love the way he barks at this guy.
And I love how real this guy, the guy is. You know, he's just like a...
Oh, that's the guy from the beginning. Oh, wow.
And I'm wondering if they actually had Heath Ledger just with a camcorder doing this.
Looks like I think likely
they did.
Probably did.
You know?
See, it's so aggressive and so good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, it's phenomenal. It's just like it's real, like you said.
There's your shaky cam, Tim.
There's our second Bourne movie.
I love the way he says word right here. And the way they make his teeth all yellow and gooky looking.
Yeah.
It's
awesome. He's had
I also like how they showed the dead body first. Yeah. So then it wasn't like, do I have an hour? Should I reveal myself or not?
Yeah. This is
question's over. We're not even talking about that today now.
Well, supposedly, the story goes, this whole party sequence right here, when Joker comes in, Michael Caine had never met Heath Ledger, I don't believe, and he didn't know anything about it. I mean, he knew, obviously, who he was, but he knew he was playing the Joker, and, you know, and they were shooting this scene, but he had not seen him as the Joker yet, and he had not seen him perform as the Joker yet, so he hadn't seen his makeup, so he hadn't seen anything, and he said, here we are on set. And, you know, and they come in through the doors and, you know, they have their whole scene. And Michael Caine I've heard him tell the story of just how blown away he was by just seeing this young guy come in. Not young, but I mean, you know, this guy come in and just rivet have him riveted as to what he's doing, and he said it just took him aback to watch this guy work.
That's fantastic.
As the Joker.
Yeah.
Not seeing it and just so being so surprised and going, wow, this is going to be something special.
Oh, his Oscar was richly deserved, and I still, you know, regardless of what unfortunately happened, and I totally think he deserved to win it. See, this whole thing of like, oh, I'm all for this guy, this DA, and he's doing good. I get it. I don't feel it for some reason. I just, there's something missing from it. I don't understand what it
That's
is.
That's interesting. I
And that for me is what kind of left some of it.
Because you're a cold-hearted son of a bitch, Serge.
thank you. Appreciate it.
Now this would be on
make
location.
Notes. Okay. Yeah.
This is not a green screen setup. That looks
no. I mean,
this might be. Well. It's nicely lit. This intercuts here may be green screen.
I think that's all location.
That's nicely done.
Either way, it looks fantastic.
Very well done. She pretty.
She has an interesting nose.
She is going to have such a good career in her 50s.
Because
I mean, she's going to continue to work.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Yeah, she totally continues.
I thought you meant like in the 50s
career. Okay. But I mean, yeah, when she turns 50, she's not going to stop working. She's just got
Because she got chops.
Well, she can act like the sumbitch, but...
Yeah.
I think what I like most about what Christopher Nolan does in casting is he has some obvious choices, but when other things come about, it's just the unobvious choice. You know what I mean? Like we were talking about earlier, you know, Chris Evans has been in three comic book movies now. Ryan Reynolds has been in three comic book, or going to be now in three comic book movies. A lot of people don't know Ryan Reynolds is going to be Green Lantern after being in two other comic books, and Chris Evans has already been in four, you know, Fantastic Four, and now he's going to be Captain America. Anyway, but a lot of studios and a lot of people in that world, the producers and whatnot, have that just, oh, well, he can do it, so it's a safe choice. Whereas I'm sure that Christopher Nolan was probably met with, like, really? You think that Heath Ledger could be Joker? Or... you're going to put Eric Roberts in a movie? It's like, no, well, why not? Why wouldn't I? Because it's the best choice without being the obvious choice. Mm-hmm. I know as I'm saying that, I'm kind of hypocritical in the sense that it's got, you know, these great actors in it, these huge name actors, but still off the center. A little Scotch there, boy.
Yeah.
So, and I guess...
So you think Harvey's plan was really to kill Dent this evening, right? I mean, it just so happened that...
No, he was planning on killing him.
Because he didn't know. Yeah. Okay.
So, no. I think his plan was to... Absolutely. You know.
And now we know that later, that cop that just ran into the room is the one that's probably poisoned the scotch. Because he's on the take with
now. Why is it that Harvey's out of danger here? Where's he not where he's supposed to be?
No, he's where he's supposed to be, but Bruce Wayne saves him.
Oh, Bruce. Okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because I know. Because that's the flashiest one. It's like.
He gives him a rear naked choke and just.
Oh, this.
Just a little eye. And I want to know the person that there's a minion had to throw all those cards in there. Yeah. Make sure there's 1,000 cards. And there's the cop that's on the take. The other one.
Now, how did Bruce figure out this was happening?
They didn't show that.
No. He did with him and Michael Caine were doing a research. And so was Morgan.
But, no, but how did they know they were there that night?
How right there? At that
they just
moment.
Knew that there was going to be a
they knew
coup de grace.
Okay.
What?
I don't know. Coup de grace. Coup d'etat?
Yes.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, what was the scene? I don't remember that at all. I thought he just came in and said they're coming. That's great how he threw out half.
Well, because for him, there's like no rules.
Yeah.
Hey, pretty boy. Oh,
well, that's nice.
He's a great action. I like how he just takes apart the gun.
Mm-hmm. That's just fantastic.
And are those guys just standard extras?
I like, think they were.
He's
yeah.
like, what the hell? This guy's grabbed me and hit me. And
yeah. That's great.
Oh, that's Pat Leahy. That's Senator Pat Leahy from Vermont.
Really? That's funny.
Yes, it is.
Who, the actor?
The guy on the left is Senator Pat Leahy. From Vermont.
Now, I'm interested to know, like, what was Maggie Gyllenhaal, her relationship with Heath before, obviously.
That's correct.
He'd worked with her brother. Or I should say made out with her brother.
Oh, that's and that's other right. Things. Well, I'm sure they all knew each other. Yeah.
Oh. I love how they got this spin around there.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm watching the reflections in the window
notice
to see if I see anything.
Is a good Steadicam? Yeah. It's still
and
steady.
Here, okay, now with the story, here's the brilliant part. Here's the brilliant part.
Yeah.
Yeah, the music has that steady psycho tone.
But then the story he tells, basically.
It's totally a different story.
And it's like, and you know the other story's bullshit, and this story's bullshit, and this guy is just...
But is it?
He's fucking right. Batshit. Well, no, come on. I mean, but that's great writing.
Yeah, yeah,
it
yeah.
It really is.
Right, because...
And the music cue is the same as before, leading up to what's going to happen to her.
Could his mind be that he believes it every time he's saying
that
it?
That could be true, too.
Well, that's what makes him so crazy
you
is that
know.
You don't know what...
I would think it would be that he's so far gone that reality is as he's saying it.
I had thought of that before, but I just really think he's just
playing with everyone.
He just plays with everyone because there, in other words, with him, there is no center. It always, I mean, he's got his plan, but it's like the behavior is all can go anywhere. Oh, this is great. And if, it's just like just stand around and
for any other comic book directors, notice how it's actual fighting. It's not this jujitsu, kung fu, karate. It's just you know, it is,
yeah.
It's practical.
Now
it's what you would do to dismantle somebody or just
right.
get them away from
exactly.
you for the moment. And he lets her go. And that's crazy. It's like, to him, it's like, whatever. No, okay. He was going to anyway.
Well, no, and it was brilliant, too. Right, because then Batman has to go after her, and he gets away.
Well, he also is going to go to whatever length that other people won't, and that's why he's successful. It's like, you know, just, all right, well. You're not going to call my bluff because it ain't a bluff.
Oh, that's right, she knows who he is. That's right, she's the only one.
And there's one thing to say about the Batman character. It's a lot easier to base in a real-world realm because there's nothing supernatural about him. There's
right.
nothing.
Well, he has no. He's got no superpowers.
Yeah, I mean, and
he's the only superhero who doesn't have superpowers.
Yeah.
Just a big bank account.
Yeah. Exactly. That's it. It's just, you know, and that what's, you know, begins when, you know, through him
this.
Training himself. He's a very well-trained human, but.
I love this story right here of Michael Caine. Mm-hmm.
So Michael Caine is looking at Christian Bale's right eye.
His right eye with his right eye. So he's looking across Christian Bale into the camera. So he's looking at the eye closest.
So we get the full impact of his eyes as much as possible.
So now if he had turned and he just looked the other eye with that other eye.
Yeah.
To go back to a callback.
And what's great, I mean, what's great is that, I mean, essentially Alfred's just laid out the thesis of
who the Joker is.
Of who the Joker is.
See this second unit stuff right here. This is great.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I just want to let everyone know that's actually me standing in for this. Okay. That was
cool, John.
I was so freaking nervous.
Did they feed
there.
You?
Now, do you think that's Christian Bale?
Yeah, craft service awesome on the
Batcraft.
Batcraft.
Hey, look. Crafty on the Batman side.
Batman crackers.
Oh, thank you.
We needed that.
And it's really interesting what and they're not pushing this whole point of, oh, another day has gone by, he's not turned himself in, now I'm going to kill another person. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? They kind of even let it go, so it's not like a driving question.
Oh, wow. Alfred is so cool.
Well, we found out that he's not some just run of the mill, you know.
No.
Chauffeur or anything like that.
Butler.
Anyway, butler. He's a warrior.
Well, it's that he's had a life outside of just being a butler.
What must he be asked? Can you go get me a minigun? Oh, sure. Whatever.
Yes, like Master Wayne.
And the great thing is the way that Morgan Freeman delivers is the best. Well, he's Morgan Freeman. But look at how he just sits there.
He's just like, buddy, you have just been... Oh, and I didn't see that coming. It's just like...
Yeah. Wow.
I like how you just
explained
the logic. It's like, go for it. That's right. All right.
Nice. Yeah, just such great delivery.
Yeah.
Oh, but I have to say, the writing was really, really quite good.
Yeah.
And what's that?
Kevin?
Who?
Christopher and Kevin Nolan, right?
Jonathan
Nolan, excuse me.
I like the fact that in this movie it goes much more into the detective work. I mean, he gets into some intricate,
forensic the Batman character.
Well, that is. Mm. I mean, he was from Detective Comics, and in the first movie there wasn't as much of it. I mean, it's much more origin and R&D and getting stuff together. But here he's really doing the work. It touches on the other stuff that I came to appreciate about, quote unquote, the comics. But Anthony Michael Hall.
I didn't even know that.
That was Anthony Michael Hall.
Oh yeah,
I totally missed that.
Yeah,
he was actually listeners. Anthony Michael Hall was playing what character that we just saw?
Wasn't he the reporter or something?
I don't think there's a certain character. I don't remember.
Yeah, he was on the TV before and.
He's used to.
He was actually. He was. He did the Dead Zone. He did the TV show Dead Zone. He's actually pretty good. The show was all right. I love that entrance to the Batcave. My favorite.
He played the bully in Edward Scissorhands, right?
He was. Yeah, and that was.
Yeah, I thought he was great there.
I didn't like him as the bully. It just didn't work for me. The movie worked otherwise. That was the one thing it didn't. Nice. Okay, great which shots. Ones of those are CG cars? That's what I want to know.
Probably none.
Oh, I don't know.
It has a great look. It looks real to me.
Well, I like how in this film they shot a lot less compared night to sequences. They shot a lot of day and practical sets. So I loved it.
I mean,
this stuff.
Environment is everything, you know, and Gotham and what I thought he visualized and realized this environment perfectly.
Yeah.
And he went back to Chicago and filmed all this stuff. So this isn't Vancouver or something like that.
Kept it in the States.
Yeah, that's Chicago right there. And it looks all very urban and modern. All the interior of the buildings are all very, you know.
It's funny what they'll do sometimes to save money in order to spend just a lot more, just to CG a shot in or something like that, when they could have, spent the same amount of just now, close off the street for the day.
Now, how did he know to go that place?
He gave the fingerprint off the bullet.
That was it. Okay, thank you. Gave
the person who loaded it. But,
And now he finds out that who these guys are.
Well, like Jaws, we now know what's going to happen with this music coming on.
Psycho Joker music.
That's right. And he also has the binoculars set. What is it? The binoculars or camera set up so that he knows that he'll be there and watch.
And that's the Scarecrow guy, right? Scarecrow. Okay.
No.
Nice. Look at that. That was very well done.
Yeah, it was very well done.
Okay, now we know what happens in the film, so can someone please explain to me how they knew it was going to happen so that he could put himself there so he could do this thing?
They just knew that he was going to be targeting him, and if there was an opportunity,
You would play dead, right?
Okay, all right. So, in other words,
they knew the mayor was the target,
but they didn't want to let Harvey Dent know, or I don't know who they let know. I think it was probably just a scheme between Batman and Commissioner Gordon.
That's just so spooky when someone doesn't answer and they just smile and laugh a little. It's like, this is all effed up.
Will you marry me?
That's not how it went with you and me, Tim.
Now, this is what bothered me. They actually went through the whole thing of telling the wife that he was dead and having to put the wife and the kid through that.
Well, but I think sets up a lot of the story of Commissioner Gordon is who he is as a man. He's going to do anything he can just to get justice as well. So it shows that
I got that
he's going to go.
I was okay with it, too. I thought it was really, really, really tough. But
Once again, that was one of the things when found out he was still alive. I was like, which I kind of, I don't know. It was just.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was tough. Yeah. Bastard didn't care. Whereas,
is the Batlight physically possible?
Oh. I don't know.
I don't know.
To have a cutout over a light source like that.
That
X
close?
Amount of distance.
Let's
to
try it.
Reflect against a cloud.
Well, they
and
do
you'll see the outline of the bat.
What do they call those? They do those in theater, right? I mean, there's a lot shorter distance.
But what are you saying with that
They're called Klieg lights.
And how sharp of an image, I don't know. I never thought about it.
I'd say yes, it is.
Okay. By the way, this is a good action sequence.
And also,
yes,
and you can
he
see
is
it.
Fighting, and we can see it exactly. Thank you. We can see it.
And what's interesting is to know now in watching it, you know, after knowing the outcome, is that the Joker's already planned all that stuff with the guy implanting the cell phone in his belly and doing all that. And he knew that he was going to get captured. This is even before what happened with the mayor today failed.
Yeah.
So, I mean, all this stuff was already in place.
Yeah, exactly. This is like Seven. This is just like in that sense, because in Seven, he had... Well, I don't know. Whoever, it's just everything was
so
planned.
Ahead, yeah.
You think he planned this far ahead with the bomb?
Absolutely.
Sure.
Oh, absolutely. That was the whole point, to get the guy in there while he was in there. Absolutely.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if the Joker plans that far ahead.
I totally planned that.
I know he planned it.
That's what's great about him. That's the different Batman right there. That's, you know, you're going to throw him off a 3-story building. And,
yeah.
You know, break his legs.
Yeah.
During this scene, I always think of Popeye Greenwich. I gotta pee.
But actually, is that him doing that? I mean, is it implied that maybe Batman is starting to cross some lines, or would Batman do that on any normal?
Not on any normal. He just, once he gets pushed too far, that he's going to do whatever it absolutely takes in the darker Dark Knight comics. Mm-hmm. I mean, whenever he's, you know, getting past the point. There's actually a point in certain storylines of the comic where he goes so far beyond what he's supposed to that even like Superman comes against him. He's like, hey, you got to clean this shit
up. That's awesome.
This is getting crazy.
Right. Yeah. Well, but part of the point of the film is that he, you know, who's been pursuing. Now, I buy Aaron Eckhart doing this right now. I get him. It was the part before where he's like the whole virtuous thing, which I wasn't buying. When he goes like this, I'm totally on board with what he's doing. And it's no criticism necessarily of his performance. It's just a combination of something in there. But this is great.
Well, he always... And that's the storytelling that I think the Nolans are doing is that it's always been there. He's always been capable of this. It's just been forced out of him. So we often are... real selves are just a caricature of what we think we should be doing instead of what we actually really want to be doing or could be capable of doing if pushed to the extreme.
Well, that's why they gave us the scene in the first courtroom where he took the gun away from the guy and punched him in the face. They were trying to give us a clue that this guy's can be pushed over the edge a bit.
But see, and he's a great mirror for Bruce Wayne's character.
Well, but that's the way he's written to be a mirror.
He allows for Bruce Wayne to be able to go, okay, well, I'm a hypocrite because I just did that. Tim, you were going to say?
Oh, I was just going to say it's very difficult to light Batman against a black background.
And Wally Pfister's doing a very good job.
Well, you know what I also really...
I'm going with lighting. I like the quality of the suit that allows it to just, it's got the matte finish. It just allows it to be picked up, which is nice. Sorry. Yes, John?
No. Yeah. The only thing I don't like story-wise is they keep saying, well, if they find out you do something mean to one of these criminals, they'll let out all the criminals. That's not how it works.
Well, exactly. It's that false emotional logic that they're trying. That's where I think the writing is not as strong, and maybe that's it's the flaw that I'm kind of picking
because find a bad cop, you suspend him with pay. You don't let everybody out that he's ever arrested. You know,
it's a movie. Oh, if you do this and all this is going to fall apart, thing we got to pull out that argument so you can't do it
right.
As opposed to, you know, you really shouldn't do it because it's not the right thing.
Right.
And you see, and this is great because this is the real Bruce Wayne, and there's so few times we get to see him be actually just himself. Mm. We definitely see him be just himself later. Because remember, he's acting as Batman, he's acting as Bruce Wayne, and then these private moments with her, Alfred... He is himself. He's the truest self he is.
And I wonder if that's just like on some sound stage or something, or is that a practical set?
Oh.
I bet with this film, it's a stage.
That's a set, yeah.
It's a very Kubrickian feeling.
Yes.
Out of 2001 Space Station, isn't it?
I dig it.
And I love how the fact that almost everything Alfred says comes to fruition and is true. He's such the voice of wisdom.
Because he is
Alfred Domus.
Well, because Alfred essentially is his father, his second father, you know. All right, please help me. Help me catch up on this. Now, why are they burning everything?
He's going to turn himself in.
Yeah,
he's done.
Got it.
And Rachel didn't want him to because you know if you turn yourself in, they don't want to let us be together.
Right. That is so cool.
That is very nice.
And then they bounce up and they're singing with Madonna on the top.
they shoot up 2 feet in the air.
On stage.
The Batman Truth or Dare tour.
Funny.
I like that they're calling him the Batman.
I do,
as
too.
Opposed to Batman the name.
I do, too.
I think it's cool.
Do you think people... That's the other thing that pisses me off.
What?
Are these just people just stupid? I mean, if we had a vigilante in Los Angeles going around and actually stopping criminals... You know, at least in The Incredibles, you know, when he screwed up the train and other things and he actually hurt civilians, then they were pissed and they said, okay, no more superheroes. Mm. Made sense. So far, I've seen nothing that Batman's done that would actually piss off civilians. Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, this gets back...
People are pissed. He's like, he's a vigilante. We have to stop him.
But, John, this gets back to what I was talking about in terms of the false morality
about Aaron
Eckhart's character, Harvey Dent, and that, we can't have vigilantes. It's like this false morality that's not jiving with the rest of everything else. It's like we're imposing it to just say, well, that's how people feel and should be. So, wow. I'd forgotten about this.
I disagree. I think there's always black and white. People are always going to think on the other side of the fence, whatever. Okay. You know, I mean, it's obvious. That's why we're human beings. So, I disagree with both of you.
I disagree with you.
Dorks. No.
You had to go to the name call.
It's the middle brother.
You couldn't just disagree. Oh, you're a little brother. That explains it.
No, I'm a middle.
You're
brother.
A middle.
So I was tortured and was the torturer.
See, nice. We're oldest, and I think you're youngest.
Turns around.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to tell mom.
Good luck on that.
That's me.
Good luck. You could just try. And going back to that about what I like calling the false morality, that's just it's weak writing. It is what it is. Yeah. There could be a better
thing. Even though I hear
or actually it was not directed fully enough to express that, so it could be
right.
I agree with you. I didn't get it. It's like I don't want a vigilante.
Well, and I hear what Tim was saying. I actually heard what some of the people were saying. Like if he was. Joker was going around killing cops every day or you know what I mean?
That's different.
Then that could.
Now, how does this...
The other thing going on this is in the comics, they never were, at least the comics that I read, it was never about Batman being, you know, working outside.
Definitely a point where they
did
say,
that.
Listen, this guy's becoming a little asshole.
Really?
And he was. Yeah. I mean, he was becoming such a vigilante that it was just getting beyond the point of reason. You're like, wait a minute, what the hell are you doing? Yeah. I mean, even though he was doing good, which I can understand.
Yeah. But the thing is, we don't see that in this film. We don't see him being an out of control vigilante.
Well, but I think what this movie shows is, and the reason I believe it is it's not necessarily what he's doing that's out of control. It's what they feel that he's causing by him being in existence and doing what he's doing. Like, in other words, all this wouldn't be happening if you weren't being a vigilante. So if you just stopped, then it would go back to being still shitty, but not as shitty
as it is. Okay. Yeah. All right. That's completely understand. Okay. Yeah. I understand what you're saying. Okay. So basically, all right. And they see that's what is like a fine point, and maybe it's just a matter of me paying attention a little more closely. I don't know. The point is that everyone's scared. And if they're like, Batman, we need our city to be safe, which goes back to the whole terrorism thing. Mm-hmm. We need our city to be safe. He needs to turn himself in because we're so scared. We're not behaving rationally anymore. Okay. Gotcha.
this used to be all fun and games, but now it's getting crazy.
Well, it's been crazy the whole time. The point is that the Joker is, it's this is chaos. It's just, and so of course they're going to go down there. And...
Now
this is a great sequence.
Why did they go to the other side of the street? They could have gone on the. Yeah. It's like you know.
Now I don't know, where does it come in IMAX? Is this whole sequence filmed in IMAX? But I do definitely know that the truck flip is IMAX.
I don't have IMAX on my TV.
Me neither.
Sorry.
But I believe this whole underground sequences, these were all filmed in IMAX, and this whole chase sequence, if I'm...
I also like how they're using a garbage truck this way. I think that's just cool. I don't know. It just seems so real and like low-budget criminal. You know what I mean? Yeah.
But getting back to the whole thing is like, obviously, in terms of plot and writing, up till now, they know that the Joker's been doing crazier and crazier shit. Couldn't they just think, like, imagine that he would just, like, look for any... weakness, and it's like, oh no, let's just act weak. Let's take the lower part. I mean, no one's thinking. It's all
right.
Well,
right.
I'm just like,
I don't know. I disagree because I think it's great writing in the sense that they're able to get away with it.
I like
because he knows
slaughter is
so
the best
much.
Medicine.
Yeah, he knows so much of how that the human being is going to react. The normal thinking human being is going to think this way or this way. Right. Since I know they're going to think that way, then I'm just going to throw my little wrench in. And whichever way they go, then great. And they're not going to know what the fuck hit them. No matter what happens, it's always going to turn out this way because they're that dumb. And they're always going to think civil, and I'm not thinking civil.
Right.
But how's this feeling? How's this going as far as script and story points and everything else as far as when you research it?
John? Dude, I'm just too jammed up in the story.
This is the James Cameron sequence.
I love
right
it.
Here.
I love it.
Oh yeah. and once again, even looking at these action sequences, Heath Ledger is awesome.
He's great.
He's really great. And now Batman just came into the picture.
Well, we found out that he's hopped up on all kinds of morphine and you know whatever other drugs too. But hey, you know,
I like that this is a night sequence.
Yeah, I love that. It just drove right into the truck.
Yeah, that's it. Is practical.
That
CG.
Looks like CG.
Yeah,
that impact shot looks CG to me.
So structure wise, it's all right there. I mean, the end of the first act, Joker says he's going to kill the Batman for money. That's at 26 minutes, and Hong Kong is the new world at 32 minutes. That he pops in to get the guy out of there, and Dent's going to go to try and get all the mob 18 months of clean streets. So that's starting the adventure,
right?
And then it's the 60 minute mark is when, and it's not at 60 minutes, but Joker's worse than we thought. Some men just want to watch the world burn. Mm-hmm. That's the, you know what I mean?
Which is a great line.
Yeah, it is. The 1 hour actual, which is just a few minutes later, is when they're at the parade. The 71-minute mark that Batman gets help is when Harvey Dent says, "I'm the Batman." So that helps him. Otherwise, he would have turned himself in and it would have been all over. So that usually happens at 75, but it happened at 71. I mean, we're right there.
And by the way, real quick, it's a great action sequence whenever there's no music. Have you noticed there's not been any music since the beginning of this sequence?
I like
so
that.
It's great. And just you let the...
Just the effects track.
The effects track, the sound effects track is the music.
Yeah. It's won the Oscar, right? I'm sure it won the Oscar for sound.
I could look it up, but I'd rather watch this massively excellent sequence.
And that's also what's so great about movies like Heat. You know, whenever they do the gun sequence, the orchestra is... are those weapons that are going off on against the walls. Well, in this case, it's the crashes, the booms, and just even that eject sequence. And this got a huge uproar in the theater.
Oh, did it? Tivo.
Yeah, when he comes out in the motorcycle.
Yeah.
It's awesome. But going back to something like Heat, the practicality of even this vehicle... it's not like the old Batmans where it just seemed like he always seemed to have every single gadget that he needed at the exact moment.
Yeah.
The Batmobile could climb walls and do all these crazy things. Like, okay, well, really? Whereas if you've ever seen the special features of the original Batman Returns, that's a practical car that they made, and it actually functions so much better than they ever thought it would. It really is a vehicle that would work.
Can I say something?
Yeah.
No. Go ahead.
Thank you. Let me interject something. This whole thing with him going with his motorcycle and knocking off all the side windows, I kind of get it, but I don't get it. I'm like, what was the point of showing that? so excessively here. I mean, I kind of get that, but
he wasn't going to get through. He had to get through, dadgummit.
Yeah. All right. Okay. All right. All right. I can buy it.
Yeah.
Oh, that is so nasty. That, thank that you. Shot. That isn't good.
That's awesome. I looked at how much of that was written, or he did that.
That's it.
He knows.
I love that line.
And once again, he's a pretty well-known actor. I can't think of his name right now.
Oh, the,
he's
been the driver?
TV shows. Or, no, the guy doing the That's not good.
Yeah, that's okay.
I forget his name now, but he's very successful. He's been in tons and tons of work.
And that was a small part. But no, he did
all
the
practical.
And also the low ceilings again are great. So fantastic.
All this is real. And that's a real motorcycle. Once again, they really did build that, and they were blown away how well it worked.
Wow,
and
man.
Then not only that, that's not a CG cape. In testing it, they realized the drift that came off that actually, now some of those might be, by the way,
yeah.
but they realized how well it actually threw the cape up and made it, you know.
They're onto something good.
That was nice. Mm. Yeah, that, okay. That
And this is bike, this was brilliant.
That bike is badass, yes. It is.
Brilliant writing and brilliant shooting and brilliant, and the whole fact that he, oh yeah.
And the bike changed.
I like how
he
just looks.
That is,
and I love that he says missed. That's just he missed.
Nope.
Oh.
Nice shot.
Practical?
That was CG.
That'd be pretty amazing.
It looked really real. That was great.
Oh no, the actual truck did
flip.
They
did flip.
They really did flip a real truck. I thought you were talking about real, really. No, I doubt that would ever in any
rocks.
Way. But I liked how they set up the way that you could do it by doing what he did.
And
with
now it's all quiet, and just like his gun goes up.
Yeah, look at this.
Look,
his
physicality is amazing.
Now the music comes in, but still, listen to the sound. And see, this is where the Joker is crazy. He's fully willing to give himself up right
here.
Oh,
yeah.
And say, you know what? Just, okay, fine.
He's killing people indiscriminately.
Well, not that. I'm talking about
he's willing
to run over right
but
here.
That was
and
a point.
Why?
But that's what I said before.
Because he really is touched.
Because
No. Why? Because that would make Batman bad.
Yeah.
If he killed him. And so in a way, Joker would win if he died.
Sure.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Well, remember what he did at the beginning of the film when he was facing down those other guys? He's always willing to die. That's the point of the Joker. He is always willing to die.
He pulled out his cape and showed all those grenades. He said, well, with the mobs, he wasn't willing to die there.
No, but he was.
He would have pulled the grenades and he would have died.
Oh, well, that's true. Point well made.
He was totally willing to die.
Yeah.
Like he spits on his own guy.
Great location for this.
Could you just please?
And
give
see,
me
but
that.
Here's the thing. Now
oh,
you know
and,
the story.
And then Gordon.
He already had planned to possibly get caught.
Yes. Oh yeah, yeah.
And then let's just say he didn't get caught. Now the bomb still would have went off in the jail.
Yeah.
You know.
No,
and
didn't.
It went off when he
made the phone
it.
Call.
Yeah, I know, but he would have still
yeah.
made the phone call. It would have still created chaos.
Yeah,
he would have just you know terrorized more, and it would have just led to something different.
Right. I'm not saying with the plan. His plan.
He
is
never
perfect.
Planned to get caught.
He's not perfectly laid out, but he's got enough pieces in play that he can play them all. He's like a chess player.
Yeah.
There is no one plan, but he's got his pieces all over the place to do whatever he needs at what time.
How do you like that overhead light there, Tim? That's practical.
That's a great... Actually, the driver there also is a character actor we've seen a lot.
Yeah, tons.
I like that one of the news microphones said that their station was in high definition.
He has a potato peeler.
Wait, hang on. What did one of the stations say?
Like, what the hell? I got a potato peeler. You never know when you're going to have to shave somebody's shin when you're trying to get information.
Thank you. Thank you for that image. I don't know. Does that make any sense that they'd put other people in there with him?
No.
I wouldn't want to be there with him.
I just think they've seen the havoc and destruction this guy has done, and to just like, oh yeah, we're gonna mix him in with just everybody. That once again, this goes back to little flaws in the writing. Unless they're talking about hubris and people who don't think far enough ahead. I don't know. I mean, with the conventions you've set up with these movies, you expect them all. Haven't they watched the movie?
That's nice.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Right.
It's like, come on, watch your movie.
I hear
you. You know how it's going to turn out.
If this is a Seinfeld episode, a great time for some makeup sex.
See, good. You slapped them.
Thank you. I like that look. He's like,
Yeah, that's not good. Someone's calling him.
The only time I can say about structure is the structure's there. It's just really longer just because of all the action stuff. You know, this is a 2.5 hour movie.
Yeah.
But those are 2 75-minute scenes. The first one was Dent saying, you know, I'm Batman, which saved Batman. And then Gordon saved Batman because Batman was down. And Joker would have killed him.
And at the end...
So they both... There was just a huge, you know, 15-minute action scene between those two scenes.
I just can't get over it.
But that's how they end.
In this scene, I just can't get over the lighting. It's just so unreal.
Oh, it's great. It's a great... Here's the great choice.
Yeah.
Because it's so clearly a choice.
Yeah. And the runny makeup is fantastic.
Which gets progressively runnier as the film goes on.
It's brilliant. That's called not on the nose writing. Let you put it together in your head. Nice. That's brilliant. That's great writing. That's great.
It's a great turning around of
what I love about
a line which is from a very good film. Mm-hmm. Complete Me.
What I love about his monologues is there's so much sensibility in what he's saying. He actually makes great points in every single point or every single monologue he's doing.
Nicely lit. Christian Bale's eyes are popping beneath his black.
Yeah.
See, look at that. Look at his eyes. Reflection of the light.
Now, structurally, John, is this speech that he's giving, does it touch any certain point?
I love the music.
That is a good question.
Nice.
Because he's definitely laid out, you know, rules of the world.
Well, what's going on is between...
Right, he's saying the rule lists of the world.
Right. Between the midpoint and the end of the second act, things just get worse and worse and worse for the Batman.
Okay.
And so this is definitely...
He's stating his credo, basically.
Yeah.
No rules versus Batman living by the rules.
Right. Yeah. And he's saying, you're like me, and the big question is he?
Well, I mean, the thing is, Batman is not like him. That's
right. He didn't kill Joker.
I remember this film just had nice interchanges. The scenes between Batman and Joker were wonderful.
Yeah.
I mean, like, here's great acting. Like, watch him sit up. Like, Why do that?
Yeah.
Just the way he
does. Yeah.
Oh, bunny.
Oh, that's nice.
What's so amazing about that right there is he already knew that just by throwing a little chaos, he knew where he was going to go. So he purposely gave him the wrong addresses for each one individually because he knew he'd go after her. And he gave him Dent's address saying that she was there. So, I mean, that's the amazing thing about his character, the way it was written is or the way he thinks as a character is like, you know what? He always is thinking about one step ahead of everybody else as far as the chaos that goes involved with it. Like, I could easily tell him both of them and just be another criminal. But in this case,
I really appreciate you saying that.
He flipped the two of them, right?
Yeah.
Because I appreciate,
so basically, he's going after her, but he's going to find Harvey.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And
but he's going to find Harvey too late.
Well,
he doesn't know that he's going to find Harvey at the nick of time or that they won't find her at the nick of time. He just knows by him making it look like possibly that he chose Harvey over her or vice versa that, well, then chaos ensues and what happens later in the film happens later in the film for a reason.
I appreciate you saying that because believe it or not, I totally missed it. I assumed that I missed a conversation that he said, I'm going after Dent.
He said, he said, I'm going after Rachel.
No, he said, I'm going after Rachel.
Oh, he did say.
And then Commissioner Gordon's going to go after
Dent.
Okay.
They think.
Right. But it's right. They switched the address.
And in this instant, maybe he does plan on just blowing up her no matter what anyway.
That's what we don't know, yeah.
I don't like the fact that they killed her.
I mean, but that's what makes Joker
such
a villain.
They killed everybody. They killed him. They killed Harry Dent.
She only signed one picture deal.
It's what makes the Joker, like I said,
This is...
Well, and that's and you know, to get on the studio side of it, so many times it seems like so many decisions in the studio system is going to be made upon, oh, we can get Maggie Gyllenhaal. We don't want to, don't kill her off. So if they had more control of the story, maybe they would be like, no, we don't want to do that because, well, what if we're going to bring her back? Da, da, da. So they're always thinking not the story first, but, you know, what is the.
Why this scene? Why with a minor character?
Well, because he gets to start a fight here, and then he gets get a hold of the cop,
right?
And then he gets out to make his phone call.
Okay.
Which then.
Okay. All right. Gotcha.
I love that tongue thing. Is that freaky great or what?
Great look. And Tim, you I think told me the story behind the makeup is what made him really do that. Do you have the story?
Man.
Remember the story you told me?
I think he did his own he came in with the makeup himself, didn't he?
No, not that. He developed that from what I heard was he had originally, you know, probably developed tons shit of things to do, but then whenever he got the makeup on, he noticed it was kind of uncomfortable, and then also that it puffed his cheeks out, and he actually used that.
So he developed that into his tic.
Yeah,
I like the fact that they didn't show the whole thing of him taking control of the car.
Sure.
They cut that out. I thought that was good.
But yeah, so that's how he developed it from the stories I've heard. I thought you told me that story.
No, I don't think I did.
So yeah, so the makeup actually being on his mouth or on his cheeks is what made him always kind of like.
Well, if his
tongue and
mouth was sliced, it makes perfect sense.
Sure.
For that to be his mannerism.
That's freaky.
It is freaky.
That's just brilliant. And everyone else is down, but he's the only one standing.
Yeah, it's a movie convenience.
Yeah.
But I can dig it.
Yeah, it's cool. Mount the curb. That's what I'm going to... That's my favorite line now from the movie.
Yeah.
Mount the curb.
I like... What was the one about... Some men just want to see the world burn. That's my favorite line from the movies, right, so far.
And for it to be the dark night, it's great that so much of this has been at nighttime.
Yes.
All this night shooting, all the blackness.
But looking forward now, knowing the ending of the movie, he's already planned he's already put into place the whole fairies being set up the way they are. So he's already got all that stuff planned out. All this stuff, the hospitals, everything. So even if he fails right here, that stuff's already being done. And he doesn't necessarily even have to be there.
So Harvey wanted
her to survive.
And remember, Joker obviously told his minions to purposefully tell her and him, hey, we're going to save one of you, to give him the choice, because he knew that, you know, wouldn't possibly lead to something. So by her telling him, hey, you know, they were telling us that they were going to force one of them to choose. So that's obviously now why Harvey Dent's going to hate Batman.
But that's like a false choice. Like, okay, two people in danger. You go this way. I go that way. Oh, the right person didn't rescue me. I'm like, I don't know. I'm like, oh, the Batman didn't want to rescue me. He wanted to rescue Rachel. Commissioner Gordon wanted to rescue me. Well, that's not good enough for me. I don't know. That's
Serge,
for me,
you've
this
never
week.
Been in love with a lawyer.
Yeah,
who's blown
you,
up
you never him. You never had a fiance blown up by madman.
That's
obviously.
A great shot. I love
this
that.
Is great
shot.
This is a great
yeah,
shot.
It is great.
I love that.
Yeah.
Goes quiet.
It's the I'm
right
a dog.
Yeah,
dog sticking my head out the window. Shot.
That was really nice.
And gee, is that like a stolen from the 9/11 shoot footage?
What?
No.
All that stuff right there. Come on.
Yeah.
Can't see the similarities.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, big old.
Did you guys ever watch TV after 9/11 when the cleanup was going on?
No, I have no idea what happened on 9/11. Yeah, none whatsoever.
I didn't. I actually didn't watch a lot of cleanup.
So much of the imagery to me reminds me of that.
Really?
Well, it was the one sheet too, wasn't it? The one sheet had a whole 9/11 tie-in as far as the imagery of the skyscraper behind him and.
The box is somewhere around here. It's got the. What she's just talking about is the whole thing of, you know, of not needing the Batman, which is interesting. I mean, if that's what the thesis of the film is.
Well, going back, what I like about Christopher Nolan did as far as like the story goes to sticking with the comic is that Harvey Dent did always have a coin that he would.
Yeah.
Flip and to make his choices, but in the comic it was always kind of weird and kind of one side was a crazy side, and then of course Two-Face in the comics had one strange face like Tommy Lee Jones and other ones where in this one face was burned off that's what it would look like if your face was burned off, and that's what it looked like, and the coin wasn't something he just picked up along the way, but you fit it into the story of saying now that coin was there as a reminder to him. And that's why he kills people whenever the bad side comes up.
Did you like go ahead.
Well, I just thought of a point. Okay, I just think in the comics, Two-Face is Two-Face. You know, this is the way I am. I flip it, and this you never know. And this goes back to the comment I made before, and I think this is probably the thing that bothers me, is that this is a regular film, but within it is an origin story of how he becomes this bad guy. And maybe... Once again, maybe what I'm feeling or detecting is the inherent weakness of origin stories. And maybe that's where, because once it becomes Two-Face and he starts acting like that, then he's got a direction, he's got verve, and he's watchable. Maybe before, because inherent in that structure of an origin story. So maybe that was my point.
I don't feel that it's an origin story at all. I feel that it's just a vehicle to be able to carry the rest of the film. So then later on, it's... All the things that the Joker is doing is he created Two-Face in a lot of ways. He created Batman to be where he's at.
But that's an origin. That's an origin story.
I don't believe it.
It is an origin story.
It is and it isn't. I mean, but it's not an origin story as this new movie isn't about Harvey Dent. This is just a way to be able to carry the next drama to happen and the next extreme thing to happen, which allows situations within the
film is the origin story. That's the whole thing.
Well, the origin of Harvey Dent.
The origin of Two-Face. That's the whole thing.
Yeah, I get your point, but they could have even left that out, and it still would have been a great film, but it just went to the extremes of that allowed for the third act to happen by that happening to Harvey Dent.
Well, that's what I'm implying. It has more to do with the writing, is in trying to take the making of Two-Face, so to speak, with Harvey Dent, that they stretched it out and tried to work into the fabric of this is what would normally happen in a film, which is admirable and is a great challenge. But maybe that's what I, you know, when I was saying I wasn't buying, you know, up until there, that's what I was picking up on is my point in terms of how some stories work one way or another.
Tim, how do you feel about this?
I'm wondering how you can be okay from Infection.
That was actually going to be my question. Do you guys buy...
I love the look.
When he turned his head and it was that extreme, I said, we just want a comic book. The whole movie to me was so freaking cool and real. And then he turns his head and I'm just like, you can't freaking walk around like that.
No. But even that, but... Well, I think even his behavior, how much his behavior changes.
I was more okay with the behavior just because, not totally though, but
if you've ever been burned, it's one of the most excruciating things on the face of the
absolutely,
planet. And
yes.
To be that severely burned, it's insanity in itself. So part of the reason he went as far off the rails as he did was because he's refusing pain, painkillers, which they just talked about. They didn't necessarily say he's refusing antibiotics, but eventually that skin's going to grow in and everything else, but he just never gets there as a character. He dies in a day later.
What I would have liked to seen for me to make it real is if every 10 seconds or 20 seconds he had to put a drop of water in his eye, like eye drop, to keep his eye moist because he didn't have eyelids.
Right.
To me, that would have like pushed it into total realism. You know what I mean? As opposed to, you just can't walk around like that. It's not possible.
I watch in the context of it's a Batman movie when it gets down to it. I mean,
yeah, me too. So I'm able to let that stuff go.
Yeah,
but I understand what you're saying.
If dramatically and stylistically artistically it hits a home run, then I'm on board.
All right. But, just for me, everything up to this moment, I didn't have to let anything go.
Your suspension of disbelief didn't have to
Joker
kick in.
Exactly. Nobody was...
I can see that,
but it was very.
But
cool.
I still wonder about the infection.
Exactly. that's the point.
Once again, if you're dealing with the real world, then there's some questions that are going to come up. Now, this I got was bad, but I think you and I had this conversation, Tim. But we really didn't like this scene.
We may have. I have to see the scene again. I'm sort of not remembering. I remember the fire, but
because he burns the money and the guy burns on the top, and we it's just like, it's an afterthought. And I'm like, the guy's. I don't want to see him burning, but
that probably had something to do with the PG-13 thing.
So that's Anthony Michael Hall.
Yes, it is.
Is it really?
Wow.
Yes,
I like right here as an actor how Heath Ledger mimics him. Watch whenever he's like, how about I feed you to your pooches?
I'm only burning my
head. What was that, Curtis?
Like when he says, how about I feed you to your pooches?
I would have liked to hear the guy yell on top, though. I didn't need to see it, but I would have liked to hear him yell.
Watch right here. He's going to mimic him.
Freak.
As sadistic as he is, he has morals.
Do you realize his speech pattern is a distant cousin to Jerry Lewis? Which more, listen to it.
Which is very interesting. If you'd pick anyone, Jerry Lewis would be a good choice because, I mean,
the most
he's a comedian. He's a joker. Uh-oh.
And see, here's the thing is I think that really, truly, he did have a change of heart. And he said, you know what? This actually fits in pretty good. How about screw it? We're just going to... So he really did come up with this at the last minute.
Right. Oh, no, this definitely improvising. He's like, no. Well, but in a way, it's almost like no one's going to play my game because that's the whole thing. This other guy is playing the Joker's game.
Yeah. And he's like, wait a minute. That works perfectly into my plan. Perfect.
It's like, I should have done that.
God. Michael Lamborghini. I love the word.
Michael Caine.
Much more subtle. I love Michael Caine, man.
This is a real Lamborghini, awesome. Too, that they buy.
Are these all, okay, these are all real cars? Yes.
That's tough.
That was a good shot in the car.
Oh, very good shot.
Very French Connection, except smoother.
And it's, and Christian Bale's not slamming his hand on the right. wheels.
Right. Gene Hackman's awesome in that. Yeah, what do you think's going to happen if you bring him out the front?
Well, I wouldn't want to live in Gotham. I'm telling
yeah,
you.
Yeah, I hear it's a bad place. It should just be wiped off.
But they're getting two more Indian casinos.
Oh, well then.
Well, in that case.
I just love those just powerful horns.
That's very Hans Zimmer right there. That's very Backdraft. Remember thing. Backdraft?
Yeah, Backdraft, totally.
I hear Kurt Russell on a fire truck. That's what I'm hearing.
Backdraft, the special effects were awesome, and I didn't care for the rest of the film. I mean, the scenes where there were the fires and they went off, amazing action sequences.
Yeah, the last fire scene was amazing, where the roof collapses on Billy Baldwin.
It was all everything. The technical parts were all good. But I didn't care for the rest of the film. Uh-oh. Here we go.
Now, is this... That's what I want to know. Is this a Horner part, or is this a...
It's
Zimmer?
James Newton Howard.
Combined
with Hans Zimmer. Oh, this... I remember this now, yes.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
You got such a cackle in the audience.
As an actor,
It's not out of glee. It's just like, there's nothing you can... What else can you say? And then, of course, now we get the name, and he knows who the guy is, and he's in the car.
I could be remembering incorrectly. I believe it is James Newton Howard and Hans Zimmer partnered on this one as well, right?
But I would
they partnered
like to know
on
which
Batman Begins.
They did what,
yeah, right.
Now,
I love
well,
this.
If you know their styles well enough, you can sort of pick it out.
Once again, I mean, yeah, great acting in every way, but there's such good writing for the Joker.
Yeah.
This monologue, once again.
Yeah. the wigs.
Jerry Lewis, great. Man. I'm telling you.
Because he knows how he's going to greet him. This, and you're right. The explanation is fabulous.
I really kind of compare his character to like the Nicholson character in A Few Good Men. You don't want to agree with him, but you do. You're like, you know what? He's got a point.
In an abstract way, but the guy's a nutball, and he kills people.
He is a nutball.
Screw him.
As an actor, to be in drag with that makeup and that character, this is. I don't want to say scenery chewing because it's done so well, but it's just given to him on a silver platter to go
sure.
and take the movie away. Just walk off with it now.
Yeah.
We're giving you everything you need.
And that's the worst part of somebody, I don't know about all the Batman movies, is the Batman's got shit dialogue. He's got, you know what I'm saying? He's got nothing like this. Mm,
as far as the flamboyance theatrical.
Joker's had at least like four little monologues that are phenomenal.
Yeah. It was written, and as a director's choice, it was in the framework of, if this doesn't get you an Oscar, I don't know what will, type of a movie being handed to you. Which is easily said, because really, it takes real talent to take it to this level.
He's got a Harvey Dent sticker on his nurse's costume.
That's great.
He's just like sticking it to him. Yeah, come on, Bruce.
Well, he's a master manipulator. That's the thing.
Well, he's had so many different parts of it planned. It's like little chess games he's got all set up, and he's playing multiple chess games at once.
And may I say, as far as sound mixes go, it was at this point, I don't want to give away a plot spoiler, but when there's an explosion, it went through the pant legs.
Yeah.
I mean, my pants moved.
Wow.
And it went through every bit of clothing I was wearing. I was like, that is one hell of a deep explosion,
That's
the sound
great.
They used.
Mm-hmm.
notice how he's making sense to Harvey Dent because he's already kind of left. He's relaxed. He's no longer holding on to him for dear life.
That's great.
And see, everybody in
America—it's
what?
It's
fear. Yes. Everybody in America can identify that with the current situation in the Gulf, whether it's being the oil or whether it's being war or whatever. We don't trust politicians anymore, so this is all fitting in right there.
Now you're talking.
I disagree. It's awesome. I disagree. It's some people don't trust politicians. Some politicians can't be trusted. Some can be. I would strongly take you to task on that.
Supposedly,
one.
74 Democrats. In the Senate or Congress or something, just voted something about the internet not being free anymore. So,
well, there's also 537 members of Congress in the House of Representatives.
We're discussing a Batman movie right now, so we'll leave that out of it. But the overall consensus are that politicians can't be trusted.
No, that's
my point.
That's
Serge, I'm not going to argue with this.
They're schemers.
If we did this, it would
be. Did anyone see Christian Bale in Empire of the Sun?
The first time I saw
Christian Bale was in Empire of the Sun.
I thought
he did a wonderful performance.
Who directed that? Was that a
that's a
Scorsese
that's
story?
That,
oh, no,
that's
Spielberg.
A story people tell for their convenience to create their own narratives.
Okay,
some people can or some people can't.
I love that walk.
We're missing a great acting piece, which is his actual
walk.
Character walk.
Yeah.
The way he does it. And he did that at the first of the movie as well, if you remember in the bake sequence whenever he's walking.
That's fantastic.
Kind of walks like a klutz or just whatever.
And this is where my...
Actually, he's walking like Jerry Lewis is what he is.
This is where my pant legs were dancing.
But this right here, I mean, think of the practicality of this explosion.
And of course, the joke is like, where's the other one? Where's come on. Come on.
Oh, well.
Oh, man.
But think of all that. Think of all that pyrotechnics on the set that day. And then, oh, there it is.
And then he's like, he runs off. I'm like, oh, I'm going now. And then the whole thing, of course, which I guess at this point it's CG. Yeah, this is CG.
Oh, it's a whole freaking building.
How about the beginning of the movie started with buses, and now you still have them at the end.
See, and that collapse right there, that whole, oof.
That's real.
Yeah, that was...
That brings sense memory back. It's not a movie.
This
won
an Oscar for sound mixing.
Yeah, I remember...
No, I'm sorry. Not sound mixing, sound editing.
Editing,
the mixing. And then also, of course, Heath Ledger.
But Christian Bale was awesome in Empire of the Sun, by the way.
he was as a child actor, absolutely.
Oh, just amazing. The intensity?
So, wait, what do you guys think of politicians?
I'll tell you exactly.
Is that a Luma crane off
to
the right?
That was. The crane was in this shot.
I love how he's upside down and they just eventually turn the camera over.
That is so weird.
Chaotic.
I like how they made a choice to have him like off camera reading with him, like
the last word of everyone.
Okay,
yes,
keep going. Yes, that was it. Perfect.
Oh, now this was an interesting point. Oh, this gets into politics as well. Actually,
go for it.
Did you buy that he'd be that upset about that?
No, I didn't buy it. That was a false argument.
Yeah.
I'm like, it's a superhero movie, and I don't know. It didn't feel organic to it. I didn't get where it was coming from.
Yeah,
this whole sequence
coming up, which blatantly and obviously is throwing out. What it is to give up civil liberties for the sake of security.
Well, this movie was made at the height of whenever Bush was in it. Yeah,
it was 2007. It was May. It came out in 2008. Yeah.
The whole thing with the cell phones.
Oh, my God.
It?
Look at that. Ugh. He was the bad cop, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. It was not, I thought it was the other guy. Okay.
And the makeup...
It's fabulous.
...for that well, to take place is actually... He's got, like, green on the left side of his face, and they do the CG there.
Yeah, that's all green.
I was wondering
green with dots.
Lined up. If I'm trying to see if there's a blur anywhere.
Now, that was harsh. That's the whole thing. We know that he's gone off the, you know, the edge.
Fantastic lighting with his head back there like that.
Yeah, this whole cell phone thing.
But they set it up earlier.
Yep. And I did it in 3.5 days.
Actually, it's been quite a while.
But the thing is, they're throwing a moral argument. I mean, that really applies to our world in a world where the morals are a little different. It is, quite frankly, it is on the cartoon side. So it's an argument that doesn't really belong in this film because they didn't set up this argument. Yeah. Actually, this is a third act problem. You know what they say about third act problems?
I don't know what they say.
First and second act problems. That's the whole thing. That's Joss Whedon, but actually, they're first act problems. It wasn't set up right at the beginning so that there would be any payoff about this. This is just like another consequence. Okay, he's resigning. Okay, whatever. You know?
Yeah.
I agree with you.
Well, that or whoever made the movie, writers and directors and producers, didn't want to come blatantly out. Well, for two reasons I saw they had to do this. One is they didn't want to blatantly come out and say, okay, it's okay to do this.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because then it would be okay. And secondly, that's kind of giving Batman this too much superpower. It's sort of like, how do you stop Superman?
But they have
to destroy it afterwards. So then in the next movie, it's not like, oh, we need to find someone. Let's just go down to the super room and find whatever we need immediately.
Right.
You know, they got to make it harder.
But Batman in this film has never at any point showed that he would go over the edge and become a danger to everyone and become megalomaniacal. If he had, then I'd say, fine, then he shouldn't have it. But they never made that argument.
What they're saying is he's going to go at any means necessary, but he still has a good enough soul to be able to dismantle it and not use it.
Exactly.
I agree
with that too. And which is fine.
That's a good plot point to where he does say,
right,
just type in your name. He just didn't let Lucius know everything.
Lucius
doesn't know that whenever he does type it in,
he's going to shut down
the whole thing and it's going to become obsolete and it's going to destroy itself.
Yeah.
And it's kind of playing on a false argument. I mean, that's the thing. Yeah, there's a good intention, but it's like kind of a weirdly structured thing.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It would be like if Superman had to obey flight zones. It'd be like, people, come on,
it's freaking Superman. We couldn't have him like Maverick going by the towers all the time and buzzing the towers. That'd piss everybody off. Breaking the sound of speed right next to schools.
You're my goose, buddy.
I broke speed.
Because there's only so much you want to really explore in these movies in terms of...
Killed somebody else with his flagellants again, Serge. Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
I taught you about the fart jokes, didn't I? Didn't you get the memo? It gets back to the whole thing with these superhero movies. You don't want to look way too closely at how things work because you want to leave it abstract enough. It's like the question about leaving Gotham City. The thing is, there is no other world outside of Gotham City. There is no reg that's like, well, what do we think of Batman? Then you're just basically playing with the illusion and then... Oh, wait. We have to see the scene.
I love that. That's just brilliant. Ugh,
now, that was good writing. It's like, what the hell? Shoot the driver. Wreck the car. Yeah.
Well,
but, you know, so it's the thing. You don't want to look too closely, but then that's the clash of both actually. Now this is brilliant. Okay, so Joker basically got everyone to go onto the ferry so that then he can manipulate the ferries, okay, got it. Wait, weren't there ferries in I Am Legend?
I don't know.
Yes, there were.
Yeah. There's a scene of them trying to get out.
Yeah. I'm sensing it. Never mind.
Are you saying that possibly Hollywood saw another film with fairies in it, so they put fairies in there?
Yes.
Film?
I think it's complete imitation. But who came first? I don't even
remember. The fairy or the egg?
There's a fairy in Peter Pan.
Oh, look, there's a dot on his back.
There's a fairy in Glee.
There's a fairy in Glee?
Yeah.
What? No. What kind of joke are you making? Don't make that kind
Peter
of joke.
Peter Serge.
Bad.
Right.
Badly.
See, Serge, you're badly the older John. Brother, so you don't get that joke.
I get to say bad, don't do it again.
Tiny.
Oh, that's, what's he from? Who is that
from
guy?
From a billion things. Friday. That's all you need
you
to
don't
know.
No, Fifth Element. He was the president.
Oh, yeah, he was president.
He Fifth was Element. The president. He's awesome.
It's a present. Hello, Mr. Dot.
I got yes, Tim. Go ahead.
I just would so leave Gotham. I mean, I'd go to Montana. I'd go to, you know.
But what if you had family and friends and a job there, Tim?
I would. Well, the job's not so hot. Family and friends. I say, come on, let's go
now. Okay, now for me, this whole sequence, well, scene sequence. It doesn't quite work for me, and I think part of the reason why is we have two fairies of people. I think it's, once again, it builds up to false argument, but also in terms of, I mean, pits the one.
What do you mean by false argument?
The false argument is like, well, are people good or not? It gets back to the people of Gotham good. Well, they're going to blow each other up. I mean, yes. I mean, it's a very existential, nihilistic point of view, and it's better played when you play it with one person or the other. Like what he said, only one of you is going to join my gang, so obviously right. They're going to kill the others. So now, basically, you're repeating the same argument he had before. And, like, how bad can these people be? And then, of course, we have the prisoners, of course, having the better conscience and saying morality and all that kind of thing. I think by having it on a fairy, a bunch of people, characters we haven't been introduced before.
We don't care that much.
The way it's written, we don't care as much. And, I mean, I get it. I get the logic and what's happening and these people acting through. It just doesn't seem as effective to me as if a character we knew from early on was on the boat. It's sort of like it becomes like another little movie. I know Batman's going to save the day, but he's never going to show up on scene. This is its own movie right here.
Well, I hear you about not caring that much individually.
This is my least favorite part of the movie.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's the thing. I don't really care for it. That's the thing. Yeah, I got it, but I don't care.
It's a good plot point, but it really doesn't, to me, fit into this film, and it could have easily been, there could have been a different type of ending sequence. Yeah, people were morally good and whatever. You could have possibly, well, you could have done it a different way without making it so extreme, because personally, in my opinion, I'd have pulled the goddamn trigger. I would have been like, okay, fine. You know, it's not that hard. Especially when you've got prisoners and killers. It's a logical thing to do.
I hear you.
It's illogical, but logical.
I thought that the first thing, I wish they would have said something like, well, what about all the guards? And all the...
Yeah.
You know what?
You make it a more... Yeah.
Because then that would have been, okay, so we got 20 guards and honest people on there.
Right.
And I'm like... But they never said that. They never
posed... There's just so much devaluing of life through this whole
thing.
Thank
you. Yeah. Thank you.
I mean, just nonstop. Women getting pummeled, people getting blown up. And it's, I'd like to live in Metropolis, I think.
I'm with you. I'm with
Harvey
Superman.
If he had values, he could have killed her. He just knocked her out.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's
right.
Okay.
He's a lover. He's not a killer.
He flipped his coin and it came up good.
Yeah. It came up slapper.
That's right.
It's slapper. He's got more like a Rubik's Cube. You know, there's a lot of different options.
It would be the one thing I don't think that I buy about this scene is that it would be such fucking chaos.
Yes,
well, exactly.
Right.
It would be such chaos whenever they found out that
Gotham
they had the
citizens,
trigger.
It would be
chaos.
Chaos.
Exactly.
But they're not regular citizens.
The thing with the scene is basically what it is. It's a play. It's a play in the middle of. In other words, it's a thing that you would actually do a play about. Mm-hmm. And you would actually show it, and you would develop it out. You'd have characters, and it would go over a certain amount of time. And then they've stuck
it'd be
that,
like
essentially that thing
or something else. Where you're going to learn something about all these people, and then make it to where the moral compass comes up, where they have to make that decision.
Maybe absolutely. Then it'd be interesting. Here they're just all cramming it in. So, but then it has to do with affecting Batman.
can be a compilation as well of ideas that they had for what Batman script, what it would be, and they took the best ideas from many different pitches of scripts and put it together for one film.
That is a neat X-ray vision. That is amazing. I love it.
I don't get how is this working?
I think it has to do with
it's the same. It's
technology that he can see everything.
The technology into his mask that he had in the cell phone earlier.
Oh, that's what it is. So from the cell phones, he can see everything in 3D.
The sonar of it all.
And now he's Daredevil.
I was really
that's what he is.
I was kind of okay with the fairy thing, but it just needed to be like more real, like you said, all those people being calm. Also, I want to put prisoners on there.
Well, exactly. That's the false argument.
Because one. You got two ferry boats. 30,000 people are going to leave. You're going to get prisoners out. Do you know?
It's an easy plot. It's an easy way to make.
Maybe not false. It's facile. It's very easy. Oh, it's a prisoner that's going to save.
I love this. I mean, I love this fact that the prisoners.
These guys aren't the bad guys.
Lucius is like, sorry, can you repeat your I couldn't understand you.
You're talking like this. The doctors.
I said the clowns are the hostages. I said the clowns.
He's like, hey, asshole, I know who you are. You can talk normal to me.
That's so funny.
Well, I was saying.
Can you speak in your normal lisp, Christian?
And the only way for him to do it is to basically, there's no time to tell them. So he's basically got to rescue them. And this is a great sequence.
It is how he does it.
And also, just in terms of how he's got to deal with this morally, he's got to keep the cops from shooting the people who are dressed up as the bad guys and not kill them. Exactly.
And it comes back, and this is a good payoff from earlier whenever the dogs now attack him after being attacked by the dogs earlier and then setting up the fact that he's going to change his suit in order to make it functional again against something like that.
Yeah, but...
Right.
And defend him.
And I like, it's like the SWAT team is coming. This is just great. Oh, that's right.
But it's a great
call back from the beginning. Oh, boy.
Yes.
See, so it was overwhelming that they would have blown him up. Yeah. It wasn't even like 50-50, 190 against 195, but...
And now, they're getting to more than meat. Yeah.
But the very fact that I've just been in a room full of 70 people, just normal people, and when they start talking, it is so damn loud. And then throwing the fact that you could die.
Has anybody here ever served on jury duty? It's insane. Yeah. It's like, it's crazy that the differences of opinions that people have, and then the way everybody thinks differently is like, wow, holy shit.
And then how loud some people.
So then now put 400 people on a boat
that are threatened to die.
That boat's getting blowed up.
Yeah.
So yeah, I would.
How often do you get to say that? We will shoot. Drop the officer.
See, I just got to say, in that situation, I mean, who knows? Who's going to. Oh, wow. Okay. And he pulls all of them off. I mean, the point is, this is a cart. I mean, as much as you want to say it's real, it's a movie.
No, it's still a Batman film, but I mean, yeah.
It's a Batman film. I mean, has there ever been in the history of anything we've seen someone trying, blow up two ferries and doing this in real life ever? No, it's an invention.
Well, that's true, but...
It is an invention.
Yeah, but that's every...
real life can be a lot worse than that.
Real life can be a lot worse, but not on that scale in that kind of way. It can be absolutely a lot worse.
That dog just plummeted 15 stories to its death.
Yeah, I'm surprised they kind of did that because some people I know are really upset about
the dogs.
Oh yeah,
Who cares about all the people in the movie?
I've heard about people say that with dogs. When someone gets shot, they're like, okay. And then
I did too. When they see a car accident on the news, it's like, I hope a dog wasn't in the car.
Hey, even Sean Penn has a good opinion with that. Whenever he was in New Orleans, they were like, why wasn't he rescuing the dogs and everything? He's like, hey, whenever I can, I try to go human first. If Sean Penn can, so then you can too.
There's Tiny. Is that what? What's his name? Tiny Lister.
Is it Lister? I always forget how to pronounce.
He's got that great one eye that's open more than the other.
I have friends who work at prisons, by the way, and this wouldn't happen.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, they would have had everyone laying down like on the ground.
I like how the criminals surround him like a gang after, like, yeah, I see what you do.
Yeah.
And we stand by what he just did. Everybody see a prison during during lockdown?
No, nah, don't care to.
It's a little chaos. Speaking of chaos.
That's not good. Oh, that's the reboot.
I'm wondering what the... I don't know if this is... Well, just throwing it out there. Heath Ledger's death, if that affected the editing of this film. Footage is in this film than what would have been otherwise.
Oh, I see what you're
of his performance.
That's interesting. Doesn't feel like it.
Well, I doesn't feel like it. Doesn't feel like it to you? He had finished his editing. Finished his post. He had locked everything, supposedly, from the story.
And then Heath Ledger.
But I understand what you're saying. That doesn't necessarily mean that they had finished the editing of what he was or was, how much of him was or wasn't going to be in the film.
I wonder if it influenced because, you know, guys, we have this and this performance no longer with us, so let's use this.
Yeah, let's add a few more minutes here and there.
I have not felt like I'd want more of Heath Ledger. It feels balanced with Heath Ledger's.
Psycho Joker music.
Yeah, whatever. I mean, I get it, but...
I am a man who does not smile much.
In this situation, it's sort of warranted.
Well, okay, the argument, I mean, that they don't have enough time to say is that a majority voted to blow up the other boat, but no one could do it.
Right.
They want to do it, but no one could actually act and do it.
Missed opportunity as a director. Did you see those extras? Did you see the energy in that room?
Yeah.
Mm.
Boy, it could have really been worked.
But but the whole thing is that's a separate film. It is in and of itself. It's just, I don't know. I mean,
I think they just could have done it differently.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the point. They could have done it differently.
Quiet.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I would still think,
and he's still waiting. He's like, come on, someone blow something up.
See, and I would think there would be somebody that would go, I'd go and do it. They'd run up to do it.
Hang on. Oh. It's like, I'm not going to listen to your story.
Like, where did he shoot him?
In the ankle, baby. He grappling hooked his
foot. And, of course, we have to know the symbolism of the Joker hanging upside down, which is from a tarot card.
Well, what's interesting, Tim, on your thought about how much did they leave in or take out or not take out because of the opportunity of using him?
Yes,
he was dead, and they could have easily had him just splat right there, without the possibility of him recurring in the next film.
And
you know what I mean?
I hear what you're saying.
I think we have to acknowledge this great shot where they actually just flipped.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Yeah.
But he once again, this Joker, he states Batman's nature. That he won't kill him.
All right.
I think that would have been...
he won't kill him because he's too much fun. Man, it's just great.
Yeah.
Fairly upsetting to see... Curtis, what you're saying.
Yeah.
As being the closure.
Well, the Gilliam film was the last film he did. Now, okay, now once again, he's defending Gotham. We're getting the whole thesis of Gotham is good or not, you know.
Yes.
Which, of course, I don't know. It's I don't know, morality.
Hmm.
And once again,
it's great that he did this all upside down, hanging like above the city.
What I do like about this monologue is that it proves once again that he's always one step ahead of Batman, which so falls into the comic books, which he's always thinking of the next crazy thing.
Mm. Right.
And it's never as simple as it seems to be. You've never caught me. And so in the comics, he just puts him in Arkham. He knows that Batman won't kill him.
Right.
But in that sense, it's great because he just has one appearance in this universe, and then that's it. He doesn't have to appear again. Once again, going back to the whole thing of not exploring too much, I wanted to point out, Heath Ledger did this whole scene hanging upside down over the city. This whole, can you imagine how many hours he spent like that? Mm-hmm. Upside down.
With breaks in between rather than full hours.
Well, obviously, no, yeah. But obviously, but it's
just
like,
to clarify.
Okay, we're going
to
hang you upside down. All right, okay, go ahead. By 1 foot. All right. Okay.
That's dead.
And we're doing it.
Commitment. You commit to the role. It looks like he totally committed.
See, for me too, one thing that bumps me about the whole fairy ordeal is that it feels like a Lord of the Rings ending instead of another ending. It just added one more layer of, okay, let's get this. Not that I wanted the movie to end, but it's like, holy shit, just wrap it up. If you're going to throw everything at me. Yeah. Just wrap something up. So by this point, it makes this less valuable to me.
Right, and this is the more important scene.
Exactly, it's much more important.
But the Joker had to be captured. And actually, structurally, usually in these things, the more important villain would be captured after. So technically, this should happen before, and then the Joker should have.
See, I'm not worried about that, but I'm worried about just that way of allowing all of that fairy sequence to have all that. That was a 25-minute sequence.
So that's the structure.
Right.
The structure.
But in terms of structure of normal movies, usually what you do is you kill bad guy's sidekick, bad guy's other sidekick, almost bad guy, and then like the true bad guy gets killed last or gets captured last.
I'm all
and that's
about
what they flipped it around.
Upsetting structure, so I'm okay with
that. I'm okay with upsetting structure as long as you set it up right.
What Joker said, this is Joker's last play, Harvey Dent. So I actually see Harvey Dent as Joker. You know, Harvey Dent would not be here if it wasn't for Joker.
Well, he's his Frankenstein. He created this monster, and now Batman still has to deal with it.
And actually, this redeemed the whole movie for me. Mm-hmm. That he cared mostly about his son than his wife, which was a nice little twist. And that was an interesting choice. It could have been.
Again, the entire film is about death. The entire film is killing what someone loves. The entire film is, ugh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I hear you.
Yeah.
I'm not
2.5
it.
Hours. I'm why I left the theater just, wow, I'm disturbed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just think structurally, I understand that this is Joker's final revenge, and I get it, and I think maybe on paper it works better. I don't know.
Notice how this whole scene...
I hear it doesn't work for you, Serge.
Well, kind of.
But this whole scene, they play off his bad side.
Well, yeah.
This show you're only showing a scarred face. Great directing.
Hmm. I don't think Two-Face has any cavities.
At least he brushes.
And that I had a problem with. It's like,
I never suspected he was dead. This I love, the fact that he put it in his head next. That's just brilliant. That really shows that he's nuts.
What I don't like is having the kid in the middle of the violence like that. I really don't like that. It's like it's like I've talked about the Incredibles. Yeah. I don't like all the violence happening to the kid characters. But that's just me.
Well, no, it's very disturbing.
I'm not even a father, and I'm like, yeah. No, that's just that.
Do you know how much of it?
No,
it's very disturbing.
You also believe politicians tell the truth, so
you know. Do not twist my argument.
Hey, I didn't
like
twist
that.
Anything. That is the argument.
Don't make a facile thing out of that. I'm serious. I really facile.
Hey, in the real world, innocent people get hurt.
What?
He's saying sometimes kids get hurt too.
I understand kids get hurt. That's not a problem.
Christian Bale was also in Newsies.
Yes,
a Disney film.
Yes, he was.
Yeah. He sang in that.
No way.
And danced.
He danced. Yeah, I was gonna say he danced as well.
I think he's supposed to have a New York accent too, and it was pretty funny.
It was at about this point in the movie, I'm just like, come on, people.
I'm worn down even at this point, and I love the film. But it's like, even at this point, you're like, eh.
Well, yeah, yeah.
Heavy breathing, you're dead. Yeah, let's just do this.
I love my Gotham. Just a question: is this bat costume radically different in any way?
Well,
from
even
the
at the
other designs,
it's different from even the beginning of the film. Remember, at the beginning of the film, he talked about how he had little head movement and he needed
more mobile.
And so they took away the cowl and made it more of a skull cowl instead of one.
I like his face mask.
I think that's a big point. Let's talk about this last thing that he does, where he says, "Blame me and not Harvey."
Yeah.
What do y'all think of that?
By the way, it follows real closely to how in the comics, in the certain series that we're following, they actually do, the citizens do turn against Batman, and they do say that enough's enough, and they actually, there's a bounty on his head and everything else.
See, for me, seeing it, I'm like, okay, maybe I can buy it more because I'm more, having come from the comics and everything, was like, Batman is... That it didn't compute for me when I saw it.
But he also, if he allowed for Harvey Dent to take the fall, one, he'd be doing what he did before, which is allowing him to take a fall, but he'd also be proving the Joker right.
Yeah. Right.
So he has to do that to protect
everything
he stands for and the image, and also to make the Joker wrong.
Right, and I understand that, and I agree with that, because in the thesis of the film, yes.
Right, right. Yes. In the whole argument of the film,
it makes
total sense that he did. And I love the fact that he's burning the letter so he never finds out that...
Curtis, to me, this sounds like James Newton Howard.
He never finds
James
out
Newton
what?
Howard has
that
a certain way with
Rachel
strings.
Said, I'm marrying Dent.
Oh, wow. Okay. Hey,
but did you guys buy that, though, with the... At one moment, she goes, you're right. I would still leave. I would still marry you if you weren't Batman. And the next scene, she's like, Harvey, I will marry you. I don't know.
I know what I'm saying? She was dying and actually, she was giving hope.
I want to make a comment about actually when he deleted everything, which was fine, but did we have to see exploding things off to the side? I could have gotten the whole thing, you know. It felt very Star Trek-y, you know, when they've been hit by lasers and everything that's just blowing up around them. And
well, to Tim's point, you think this is James Newton Howard, but I mean, I absolutely love this music and the way it finalizes the film and the way it ends with him kind of going off in the distance into the shadows.
The chords and the way the strings are dancing and what they're doing, it sounds very James Newton Howard to me. If you heard the final cue to Signs, it has the same.
Well, I can hear that, but this is Hans all the way.
But
this
type of percussion and everything is very Hans Zimmer.
So how do they collaborate and something like that?
That's interesting. I don't know. How did that work?
I don't know.
But I love this final shot and the way the music culminates with him running off into the light like that.
Right.
Or driving off.
Well, that's why I'm interested, like, where the next film is going to go.
Yeah, he's not a hero. He's a silent guardian.
Okay. Interesting. So in other words, now he'd have to essentially battle crime with no one seeing him.
And no support.
and no support. Okay, all right. Now I get a okay. Thank you, because now I get a better idea of what it was, as opposed to I was working with the police. Now I have to work completely on my own. And
Or Commissioner Gordon will still be with them.
Well,
obviously.
Yeah, exactly. But it's on the down low, as opposed to hi, yeah. Commissioner Gordon. I've showed up and I'm doing my job. Okay,
well, that,
all right.
That
okay,
goes
I got
back
that.
To
yeah.
Plots of the comic, they do that. There's a lot less of the light in the sky that everybody's like, oh, Commissioner Gordon's calling Batman. It's more of they meet in the back alleys and they have these kind of conversations about okay, who we're going to do next. It's kind of like almost like.
And so he becomes
almost like
becomes
the hanging judge giving Clint Eastwood the
Thomas Tall.
Well, but it's like he becomes basically a legend.
Yeah.
It's like no one really knows about him, but he like pops up. Have you heard about Batman? Oh, no one ever sees him. He doesn't make himself seen, and he melts into the night, which is kind of like what he was at the beginning of the first one, but he let himself be seen, obviously.
Yeah.
All right, okay. Now I understand that so much better, because then I was like, what? I didn't know where it was going. Okay.
Well, the good thing is, Serge, you and I disagreed on quite a bit again in one of our commentaries, so we're batting 1,000.
That's right.
So that's good.
Well, actually, no, we actually agreed. We were just saying it in different ways.
No, now you sound like my wife.
Agreed?
I ain't your wife, buddy.
What?
Who? How many?
That we could totally disagree on.
I am not your wife.
Well, let me ask you this. Tim, as a score of a film, how do you rate this for the fitting of the film and the way it fits into the film? I actually personally, because you know the type of score that I like, I love it, I'll even listen to it outside of the film. But how do you like it being?
I think it supports the film well.
But
I think it's fine.
Would you ever listen to something like this?
I don't think I would listen to it outside the film.
I am in agreement.
I like the strings. I like some of the strings.
Actually, if you listen to the cues, a lot of them are, I mean, basically they use the same cues over and over, and are just little variations of it. There's not that much of a breadth.
Thematically
themes,
and melodically?
No.
It's pad, a very effective mood, pitch, but I wouldn't say it's thematic material, melodic musical structure.
Yeah.
I mean, which, as I said, it supports the film well.
I mean, there wasn't like any development of different themes that I know.
I love the Danny Elfman Batman theme. I love Danny Elfman.
But were there themes developed for different characters? I don't think there were. It was like more for
Elfman
situations.
No.
In this film.
Oh no, I didn't feel there was.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, what about every time the Joker showed up? They always had that one.
Which
but
I would
but
say
that,
is not
but
a
that
melodic.
That was thematic, but it wasn't associated with the Joker. In other words, every time something came tense, they used the same getting tense.
Dopey, happy, grumpy, which is kind of funny.
Oh, at the beginning, yeah. Yeah, I mean, exactly. The Danny Elfman. Oh, Danny Elfman definitely. Well, that was a great Batman
nice
theme.
Stuff.
Yeah.
But this the end title right here, I like this. This sounds very James Newton Howard right through here to me.
Right. Yes.
And John, how about script wise? What do you think? What did you like?
What did I like? Well, I mean, it was all there. It's just a lot longer with all the action sequence. I mean, that's what I like. I love the monologues. I mean, there's very well written.
I did too.
Of the Joker, Heath Ledger. They say actually the way to get actors for writers is to literally write monologues, and that an actor will take a whole movie just for one monologue.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so...
for good monologue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good monologue can win
an
Oscar.
In fact, the guy who wrote Bull Durham with the whole...
Ron Shelton?
Yeah, what's the one big little monologue? Believe in the pussy,
yeah,
and
the monologue,
I believe in
that
the...
real fast quip where he's like, you know, I believe in the curveball.
There's a film out, Tales from the Script.
I've seen it.
Okay, and he says in there, so I don't know if this is true or not, but he says it himself, that he never liked that little monologue and that he was thinking of cutting it or rewriting it or whatever.
This is Ron Shelton or Costner?
Yeah. Okay. No, the writer.
Okay, Ron Shelton.
So,
who also directed it, by the way.
Oh, very good.
Well, because, I mean, you know, besides, you know, in comic book movies, nobody monologues.
Yeah.
It's like in The Incredibles.
Yeah.
He was monologuing. Yeah. I mean, but monologues say what we would like to be able to say, make the perfect point and to really... you know, stick it to somebody and whatever. So,
right. They're a moment to be theatrical.
Exactly. So for those actors, it's awesome.
Yeah.
awesome.
And the good thing about it, the writing is the monologues were motivated. You didn't feel they're monologuing.
Contrived.
Yeah, yeah.
They were set up well and in a situation and with what was going on within the scenes and the characters that it made sense. The Joker was there. His monologues made sense.
And usually when he did a monologue, he changed a person's behavior.
Sure.
So he got the one cop to beat up on him, which got him out. He turned Harvey Dent.
But that's what a monologue is not just about talking. It's about changing something. And there is intention in there, or else it's basically a boring monologue, because all you're doing is you're monologuing, as opposed to I am accomplishing something. So, except for Gert Frobe and Goldfinger. Okay, he does a good monologue. All right. Okay.
Well, besides that, this whole film is what I'm more impressed with. Yes. With films like this, is the use of special effects in combination with the practical effects and practical sets and everything, and it being invisible for the most part.
This film did a very, very good job at that.
You know, and I know in reflecting back to what I've said, when I say, "Oh, that's probably CGI," or I'm probably wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is the case in point then? So that's great.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
when they blew the ones that are obvious that burn me up, but if I have to guess, then that's good work.
Yeah, exactly. It's like the truck.
Yeah,
that was a great stunt.
You know.
Yeah,
but like the hospital. I mean, I can and tell also, because I mean, I was looking for it.
I felt that all these interiors where you saw the city outside the windows, they looked so real, but they're probably all green screen.
Maybe not.
I don't know.
I'll bet 80% of them were green screen. I watched the Hangover, and I remember thinking that all this Las Vegas stuff, they were out. But then I saw behind the scenes, it was all green screen, where they're in their apartment and their stuff in the hotel. It's all green screen.
Oh,
I was like, you guys.
So the stuff in the hotel room.
Yes, in the hotel room is all green screen.
Which makes sense, because I did look at that, and I was just like, holy geez, they destroyed a lot of stuff.
So after that, I said, Tim, don't get too smug. I mean, because...
you can't even pick it out now. In fact, I'm actually not sitting here at the table.
Oh, you're green.
Oh, you're green screen.
See, case in point. Okay, and then we end with the Psycho Joker sound. Very interesting.
Nice.
Yes. Like something's going to happen. Because that was the whole point. So the Joker is gone. Third film will be out in 2 years, and Inception comes out pretty soon.
Yeah.
Looks good. So this will date this thing, but that's where things stand historically when we've seen this film. So.
Next, we'll be doing a Shirley Temple film, right? Counterbalance, The Dark Knight?
Something.
Danny Kaye.
How about a Mickey Rooney, Judy Garland film?
Clean out that barn, put on a show.
What's this about tobacco? Oh, we have to apologize for tobacco. Okay, there's been a ton of killing. We're not going to apologize for that, but tobacco?
Yeah.
Unacceptable.
No, we can't accept that. That's
crazy. That's crazy talk. That's right. We kill people in all sorts of horrible ways, but... Okay.
We will not. All right.
Beat this one to a pulp. So what everyone think?
I'm done.
You're done. You don't like this film anymore?
I'm done talking. That was good. I had much fun. It's much fun always with you guys. Always a very good time.
Did you learn anything, John?
Did I learn something? I'm sure I did. I'm done talking. I had a really good time, though.
You had a good time?
This is an after-school special. We have to have a lesson. You have to learn
something. Listen, this is all about morality, so is there more we could take from it? But you don't
Like that. Let's talk about...
this is all about morality.
It's a good question. It's always about, right, if I was in a certain situation, what would I do? And I must say, as far as I know, I've never been in a life-or-death situation.
Well, it's not so much. It's what would you do in that situation? But watching this, how does this have you look at your morality in your real life, kind of thing?
What do you mean morality? Well, just mean that I'm going to die.
I don't think any one of us would do any of the stuff in this film, because once again, film is a projection. These are situations. It's drama. It's not our real lives. So, since there were these questions of morality, what can you maybe take away from it?
Well, I mean, if you were given a choice, if the four of us are in this room,
yes,
and somebody came in and had a gun with three bullets and said only three people are walking out,
right?
Would you beat the heck out of me and shoot me? I mean,
only how many people are walking
out? Only one person's walking out. I'm sorry. Yeah. My math is sort of shot. If you have seven people on a train
and they're traveling in different directions, just,
yes. And well, the wind blows,
that wasn't quite the question I was asking.
I know, but I mean, you keep going back. That's to me. That's the whole question the Joker kept asking over and over and over again. That was pummeling. Was that when push comes to shove, people act chaotic and barbaric. And that his whole point was to bring that out, and he couldn't bring that out in the Batman.
Okay, was his point to bring that out and make people act barbaric, or was he using that, making people face that to try and basically sow chaos and destroy the fabric of what everyone was to have them lay themselves bare and basically destroy this? I mean, essentially burn it, not figurative and literally, but figuratively burn them because they can't handle having been exposed to all that kind of stuff.
I think his point was that this, like he said about the cops, the rules that they play by really will just go off to the wind when push comes to shove. And I think that's what he was setting up over and over again. When push comes to shove, everyone's going to go for themselves. When push comes to shove. And the boat thing said that that's not true. And Batman said that's not true.
Right.
But all the criminals did that. I mean, it started with the opening sequence. You know, take the money, shoot the next guy. They said it.
But the
really
criminals
clear.
On the boat said no.
Right. And that was the final answer was not all people do that. So if you ask me what am I taking away from this, that's my big question. I mean, I don't think.
Unless you're taking away a question.
I would attempt to fight. You guys are bigger than me. I would have to tell my jokes that way out of it. That's how I did it in high school. But,
I can tell you what I learned.
What'd you learn?
Tim, what'd you learn?
I'd move the hell out of Gotham.
That's right.
Anyone that wants to come with me is more than welcome.
There you go. Right.
Moving van is pulling up tomorrow.
U-Haul, 1995 a day, baby.
Coitus?
Nothing. Same thing as you. I mean, you know, I mean, as far as I go, I mean, I don't try to overthink this film too much, except for, you know, I mean, the little things that bother me, which is like, well, you know, that just seems... But, I mean, like, my whole thing with that is just the fairy thing, and you know, you can get into whatever debate you want over it, and I think that's part of the reason they put it in there is to get it. And it's would you? Eh.
Yeah.
And it fits into the fabric of the story, but at the same time, it's a little, you know, ostentatious at the same time to be able to sit there and put that in there. So, but other than that, I love the hell out of the film. I watch it all the time.
Okay.
I've seen it hundreds of times. So, I don't try to, you know, for me, since I believe politicians are generally... not honest.
I love the fact
dead horse.
Dead horse.
I'm in the real world. No, I can't argue.
Please let him talk. Let him talk.
I love that.
I would just like to say that I enjoy the film.
And I will say that I really enjoyed the film somewhat. I mean, I liked the Michael Mann-ish qualities to it when it was like a Michael Mann film, a good Michael Mann film. I really enjoyed it. Once again, I think I pointed out all the structural things. That seemed to, I think that Harvey Dent story, I think I hit on the point. I finally figured out what it was that at least I think bothers me. I love Heath Ledger's performance. It's brilliant, absolutely brilliant. It's very well deserved.
It steals the movie, that's for sure.
But he's integrated to the film. He doesn't steal the movie to the point where everything else is wiped off. It's basically as well balanced as this film is going to be. Fairy thing, obviously we talked about that. And my point about politicians is that
go ahead.
No, we're talking about it. We're going to talk about it. My point is that to say no politician can be trusted. That's like saying no one on this planet can be trusted or everyone can be trusted. All people are different. All politicians are different. All power is different. Some people handle it very well. Some people don't handle it well. Some people can be trusted. Some people can't. We have many different politicians at many different levels in this country. There are a lot of politicians who are doing their utmost to do the best for what we can. And there are politicians who are out for themselves, and there are different circumstances who are out for other people's interests. There are different people, but I do believe there are people out there, and like Batman, who believe in the better part of what we are and try to do the best thing. I have a friend who's a vice mayor, and let me tell you, he's to be one of the most trustworthy people. He's a great person, great politician. I think he'll do even better later on, and that's my point. There are good people, and there are not good people. And to make a blanket statement is a disservice to, the whole institution of. Let me finish.
I'm not interrupting you. I'm going to agree with you.
It's a disservice to the institution of. of government. We do have to have some government. I mean, you know, and
you're taking the argument further than what I was saying. No, but I did not say all politicians.
No, but people will take that argument is my point and say, well, government can't be trusted whatsoever, and they run with it, and no one ever tries to counter that argument. And the point is, it's not that simple, and I think people should not consider it a simple subject.
We are
there
in
are good people.
More than you think.
Okay, I just want to make sure that's, you know.
Christian Bale was also in Reign of Fire.
Reign of Fire.
With Matthew McConaughey.
I'm fighting with dragons. What do you think of Reign of Fire?
I just rewatched it. I liked it.
I didn't hear a thing about it. It came out. I'm like, this is
it was,
a cool
It was
film.
Okay. I was like, what is this thing? I've dragons in the future? Okay.
I will say, but by the way, I mean, what I was thinking earlier is, you know, the one thing, if anybody ever gleans something that we think that we're holier than thou or whatever, whenever we're watching these movies and we're commentating, oh, this bogged me, blah, blah, blah. It is hard to make a good film in Hollywood, and that's the thing. And it's the appreciation of these films that why we're watching and we get so much out of them and we like to talk about them. So, I mean, that's one thing I want to make clear, that if anybody is still listening after our politician argument. But in the sense of all of the films that we ever commentate on, at least this group, I believe it's because we love them so much.
That's not that
we all think that we could go make a film and do it better or act a film better or write one better or direct one better or produce one better. It's hard to do.
I'm inspired by them. We all love film. It's not like just like we truly love it. We love how thinking because we are somewhat in the business and we know how this stuff is done, and we appreciate that part too. And it's the whole thing. We appreciate definitely the making of them and just watching the craft and what the wonderful things that come out of it. Because film definitely is like the. It's a key piece of our culture, and it's been for the past whatever 110 years that it's been that the film, you know, modern film has been around. It one of the key things in changing our society and guiding our society.
Sure.
It is the media. It is literally the medium for us for seeing good fiction. So
yeah, and may I say that I'm very thankful to film, like any good art, the many things it provides to society, but film providing stimulating conversation. You can tell how good a film is and what it's about by how you talk about it afterwards. Mm-hmm. And I am very thankful in my life. I've had some of my best conversations out of my life revolving around coffee shops after a movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and I'm very thankful for that.
Yeah.
Cool.
And this is why it's called Film Grok, because we grok it so totally. So, all right. On that note, I think we've done this film plenty of service, and we're going to wrap this one up. I have been Serge Delpierre,
John H. Ruby,
Tim McMillan,
always right, Curtis Nelson.
Yeah, you wish, Curtis Nelson.
Oh, door.
You are a middle. Let me tell you. Okay, this is the oldest one saying, "Okay, good night."